Carlisle and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your seats. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce his size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. We're back live in the studio. That means we're going to be taking your phone calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. It's great to be back. We were at the Families USA Healthcare Conference last week for a couple of days. Hope you enjoyed the interviews and the discussion that we had those couple of days. In the future, next week, we're going to be heading back to D.C. for the Good Jobs, Green Jobs Conference. I'm going to be talking about how do we turn the economy around? How do we keep it going? You know, we're seeing some signs of improvement, but we need to keep going further. We need to be investing more. All this stuff that we're hearing in Washington, oh, we need to stop spending. Oh, we need to constrict. We need to cut. Wrong time for that. As any business owner will tell you, the last thing you want to do is start cutting when things are going bad. You need to invest. You need to expand, or you're going to lose. And that's what we're going to be going to D.C. for the Blue-Green Alliance's Good Jobs, Green Jobs Conference. So I'm looking forward to that and the discussions we're going to have around that. Tonight on the program, John Hanger, former Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection Agency here in Pennsylvania, is going to come talk about jobs, going to talk about the environment, some of the things moving forward, job creation, that kind of stuff. Mickey Bolt from the Alliance for American Manufacturing going to be stopping by in the second hour to talk about the Good Jobs, Green Jobs Conference. What kind of things the Alliance for American Manufacturing is doing and how we get again, it's about the jobs. It's real simple. They're going to attempt to swing the little shiny thing in front of our eyes. They're going to attempt to distract us, pull us away from what's really important. And what's really important is creating an economy that works for everybody, where you have jobs that pay family-sustaining wages, that have some security. And we go back to producing stuff. This idea that, you know, I'll wash your car, you come over, cut my grass, or that kind of an economy can only last for so long, as we're seeing. So that'll be interesting. Also, Jeanette Smith from the Interfaith Worker Justice Group down in Florida is going to be talking about wage theft and ordinance in Florida. I guess just got shot down, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. But before we get to it, you know, we went to D.C. last week, and darned if I didn't get a ticket. It seems like every time I go to one of these conferences, I end up getting a ticket for parking in the wrong spot. And, you know, I got it again. You know, one of those, and it's duh, should have known better. But, you know, it's one of those things you tend to learn. But, you know, here's the thing. While we were there, and it was really a very good conference, I did learn a couple of things about big city kind of living. And how I've gotten used to living out here in the middle of, you know, not such a big place, but a lot of difference. And I think I told the story a little bit last week, but, you know, I thought it was interesting and how different we think. And it was one of those moments where, you know, maybe I have been living out of a major city for too long, that maybe I've lost some of that city insight, some of that thought that, you know, could get us into some trouble. I went to park my car, and I have a pickup truck. I went to park in the parking garage, and I pulled down to the parking garage, and a guy comes running out, and he takes down my license number, and he wants my driver's license, and it's this whole ordeal that, you know, I'm going, wow, has it gotten to be this bad? Now, granted, we were just a block from the Capitol. But part of me said, yeah, okay, no problem. I understand. You know, that's the post-9/11 world, after all. So the guy goes, you know, I need to check into the back of your van there. Let me check the trunk in the back of your van. And I say, all right, whatever. You know, do what you got to do. And all of a sudden, you know, as soon as he opens the back of it up, I hear screaming, oh, hey, oh, and people start running, you know, coming back from everywhere. And so I get out. I'm going, what's going on? Darned if I didn't have 3 propane tanks in the back of my truck. I mean, it's a dumb story, and it's really something that, you know, I can't believe I did. But I still did. So I got these 3 propane tanks from our gas grill, along with 3 5-gallon containers. You know, they're empty of gasoline. So the visual is you've got these three tanks and then 3 gas cans in the back of this pickup truck. And you go, I can understand how it would have drawn a response. And then I had 3 big bags of rock salt back there, which, you know, probably, again, not one of those things that you want to be on the wrong side of. And, you know, fortunately it all worked out and the guys were eventually decent about it. But the reality is, you know, it's a whole difference of, you know, I don't even think that way. But when you live in a city like Washington or New York or L.A. or any of these places, this idea of others comes into mind. And when I was telling this story over the weekend, some of my neighbors, and it's interesting how folks see it. And I guess it's based on where you grew up and what kind of things you're used to. As I was telling it to a couple of different people, they were, you know, my friend who's always lived in an area like this, it's, you know, pretty sparsely populated. Well, what's the big deal? You know, I drive around with that kind of stuff all the time. My friend who comes from another guy who comes from a big city says, well, you know, wow, that's pretty stupid. Why would you do something like that? It's these two different ways of looking at things. And I got it. You know, I fully understood the stupidity of my action, which it was. It was really just a dumb thing to do. And and as my wife said, you deserve to get whatever it is you got, because, you know, at the end of it, it was really just a dumb thing to do. But we did have a good time at the conference, and we met a lot of great people there at the conference. Families USA, a fairly conservative group. They sprung up after the Hillary defeat. When the Hillary Care was trying to go through, this is something that sprung up out of that. They're a very centrist group, one of the groups that, to be honest, they were never really single-payer people. They were never really the folks that, you know, were on that bandwagon, not even really the public option. They were the and this is my sense of talking to the people. They were the insurance-backed people who basically they were pushing for this plan. They're very happy with this plan. Now, as I've said a number of times, I'm not overly thrilled with the plan that we ended up with. There's a lot of work to be done, and I think for going forward, it will be done. I think it is important that we focus on the good things, because right now the good things are no more rescission, no more pre-existing conditions, no more caps. Kids can stay on their parents' plans till 26. There's a lot of very good things in this right now. There are going to be some good things coming down the road. A good start, in my opinion. A good start. Now, you know, there's some folks that we met were happy with the way it is. You know, once 2014 comes, it's going to be mission accomplished. I don't agree. And I don't think many people do agree with that. But these folks, you know, yeah, President Obama came and spoke, and you got to know what kind of political clout these folks had. And it was a good conference. I think 700 people showed up. We had a nice time. You know, again, we had a good opportunity to meet with some of the Muckety Mucks and get their thoughts. And again, if you missed any of those programs, you can go back to our website at thericksmithshow.com. We have everything up there posted for you to download and take a look at. Now again, next week we're going to be going back to Washington to bring you the Blue-Green Alliance's Good Jobs, Green Jobs Conference. And I'm kind of excited about that because every time I go to these things, we learn about new technology, we learn about new innovation, we learn about new direction, and that's kind of what I'm looking for, especially looking at what's going on in Egypt and Tunisia and all of these places around the country that are causing unrest and instability in our oil supply. You would think that we would have learned the lessons from long ago and gotten off the juice. Not the case. And I'm hoping that at some point we do wake up and realize that we got a real problem. And the problem is we're hooked, line, and sinker, and there's really no way of getting off of it. So in order for us to begin to get away from that, conferences like this one, discussions like they're going to be had next week are important. And having people who are willing to invest in them are important, which is why I think our government, and again, now that the Republicans have taken control of the House, big problems, but our government has to lead the way. They talk about the Chinese spending, untold amounts of money on alternative energies. It's the person who controls the new energy technology who's going to dominate in this century. It's the person who can figure out how to cheaply and efficiently fuel their cities, fuel their country. They're going to be the big players. They're going to be the big powerhouse. And again, it's the Chinese who are doing all of this investing. So where's all of the innovation going? It's going there. I've talked about a numerous number of companies who have gone over and said, we're going to move our R&D from the U.S. to China. Why? Because there's a lot of money there. There's a lot of R&D money for them to get a hold of. While we're bickering about ridiculous things like repealing the health care bill, which I don't know if you saw today, U.S. District Judge Robert Vinson, a Reagan appointee, and look, there was no surprise. We knew this was coming. I called it, a month ago. He has struck down the entire Affordable Care Act. Now, the other two that ruled the mandate unconstitutional simply ruled the mandate portion of it unconstitutional. This guy went further. He threw the entire thing out. So again, this is going to end up before the Supreme Court, and we know that's going to happen. And we've known it's going to happen for some time, but I thought this was interesting, that this guy would take the entire Tea Party approach and pitch everything out the window. I find it quite interesting. But again, another Reagan appointee, another one of these folks who has bought into it. Even in light of the legislation that came up last week that we talked about, where Congress passed a law within the fifth Congress of the United States, mandating that all seamen have insurance and pay for it out of their check. There's already precedence for this. Yet, again, it all comes down to how you view things and where your ideology takes you and where your belief structure is. And obviously these folks, they have this vision, this idea, this fantasy of what the country was founded on, of what the country is in their mind. And it's one of those things where I'm not quite sure where they're getting it, but it is something that we're going to have to deal with. Anyway, today on the program, John Hanger, former Secretary of the DEP, going to be here, Mickey Bolt, Alliance for American Manufacturing, and Jeanette Smith, Interfaith Worker Justice. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. A New York City councilman is being scrutinized by prosecutors and the public for conflicting statements regarding an allegation that sanitation workers came to him and complained that they were under orders by their union to slow down snow removal cleanup in late December to protest budget cuts. The allegation by City Councilman Dan Halloran led to a media firestorm directed at unionized city and state workers. Halloran originally told CNN that after the workers called him, he invited them into his offices to sit down and talk about the situation. However, a spokesman for Halloran told the New York Daily News on Friday that the councilman only spoke to the workers briefly before sending them to find a different attorney. Halloran invoked attorney-client privilege when meeting with prosecutors and has refused to reveal the names of the sanitation workers. Elected officials in New York City are not allowed to provide unpaid services for city-related work according to ethics rules. The New York Times wrote last week that investigators have been unable to find any other workers willing to admit knowledge of the slowdown plot. As union construction workers struggle to get back to pre-recession employment levels, they're stressing the benefits of highly skilled labor. Doug Cunningham files this report.
In construction today, everybody wants to build faster, better, safer, and cheaper. In St. Louis, union construction can deliver on those goals. Jim Lamantia is the director of Pride, Productivity and Responsibility Increased Development. Lamantia says it's because union construction is highly skilled and productive. He says the I-64 project in St. Louis was a prime example.
They met the schedule. In fact, they came in several months ahead of schedule, and they also came in several million dollars below budget. Once you get to the point where you are a highly trained individual, then the cost of your services can be as high as it is in St. Louis, and it still doesn't add to the cost of the project.
Lamantia has a study of highly technical medical building projects showed that union construction in St. Louis was lower than similar project costs in many places around the country.
Ford's 2010 profits exceeded the company's expectations, reporting income of $6.6 billion, nearly double the profits of 2009. The high profits will mean bonuses for workers in the shape of profit-sharing checks. 40,600 hourly workers will receive a check of nearly $5,000 in March.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by ULICO and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Well, the final numbers are in on the California gubernatorial race, which is being called the most expensive non-presidential race in the history of our country. The defeated candidate, Meg Whitman, a Republican, spent a record-breaking $178.5 million, $144 million of that from her own pocket, making her by far the biggest self-funded candidate in this country's history. She lost by 13 points. The eBay queen spent more than $43 per vote, which, while you think that's a lot of money, is nothing in comparison to what Mayor Michael Bloomberg in New York spent in 2008 running for his third term, $183 per vote. That's pretty amazing. All in all, the mayor of New York, he spent $260 million. To get a job that paid $225,000 a year. Our governor here, Tom Corbett, he has taken some shots concerning where his campaign money came from. Did the $1 to $3 million he got from the drilling industry get them anything? The right is salivating at all the stuff that's going to be auctioned off in the coming months at what I'm calling rock bottom prices. The truth of the matter, when it comes right down to it, small amount of money can go a long way. I was never a huge Ed Rendell fan, but to be honest, I'm missing the guy already. I've got John Hanger on the line. John was a former Rendell Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rick.
You know, I was watching one of those Sunday morning shows the other day, and the Republican State Senator John Gordner admitted that Pennsylvania was the best state in the country using stimulus money to create jobs and to build roads. While, you know, this isn't surprising, It's surprising to hear a Republican say that.
Well, that is. I don't think I've heard a Republican say a nice word about stimulus. And let's just remember some very quick facts. When Barack Obama was raising his hand and taking the oath of office on January 2009, in that month, we lost as a country over 700,000 jobs in 1 month. By January 2010, the job loss had been reduced to zero. In the 1 year later, job loss has gone down to zero. What happened? Well, a couple things happened, and one of the big things that happened was the stimulus program was passed in February of 2009. Stimulus worked. It was one of the reasons why we didn't plunge into a Great Depression. It's one of the reasons why the car market that collapsed to 9 million sales a year has now come back to about 12 million. It needs to get back to 16 million to be really healthy.
Right.
The stimulus has created a lot of jobs. And I have to say, in Pennsylvania, we did it really right. We were number one in transportation stimulus. We're number two in energy stimulus. We've done a great job in getting stimulus out into wind farms, solar installations, energy efficiency projects at county governments, local governments, nonprofits. Tremendous job. We got about $130 million that I had a stewardship responsibility for energy stimulus, and that was matched by over $650 million from the private sector. We put a lot of people to work pretty quickly. And the great thing about it, Rick, is those roads are probably going to last a good 10 years. The energy projects that we've done, those solar panels, they're going to last for 25 years. The wind farms are going to last for 25 years. It's going to create real energy, real electricity that will keep our prices lower. We sent assets to the future, not debts to the future. We really invested in workers today, and we invested in our future.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at some of the job numbers, and it showed that Pennsylvania had was second in the nation in job creation during 2010, which I thought was pretty amazing.
It is, and one of the things that's really rather remarkable is that some of the business organizations in Pennsylvania constantly run down the state. They describe it as a terrible place to do business. They say the business taxes are too high and the regulations are too tight. And if I were to listen to some of the business organizations in Pennsylvania, I'd never want to do business in the state. And it's just not true. Here we actually, I think that when the numbers were checked again, we came in third in the country in total jobs created in 2010. Now, we all know 2010 was a beginning of a recovery. You know, the nation created 1 million new jobs. Nobody is saying that good times are here, happy days are here again. We know we've got a long way to go, but, you know, 2009, the bleeding stopped. We went from losing 700,000 jobs in a month to losing no jobs in the base of a year. That's pretty good work by really Democratic members of Congress, some of whom have lost their jobs.
Yeah, well, how can you lose that message? I mean, you know, when you go back to this, you go back to the Recovery Act. Personally, I think it was too small. I think it should have been bolder. I think it should have done more, less tax cuts, more investment. But that's a whole argument for another day. How do you lose that argument then? Because we are seeing things turn around, and we were seeing things turning around.
You have to give President Obama, I think, an A for policy and an F for communications. He has the biggest bully pulpit, and he lost that debate.
I think that's the Democrats' problem. They're not good at campaigning. They're not good at the messaging. Republicans are fantastic at it. You come up with a campaign slogan or a cute little name for a destructive bill, go to a Republican. But if you want to govern, that's a whole different ballgame.
Well, that's right. And let's take a look at another state in the 2010 numbers. New Jersey is last in job creation. That would be... who's the governor there, Rick?
Chris Christie.
Oh, Chris Christie, right.
Tom Corbett's idol.
And a lot of people's idols. Governor Corbett needs to find a better role model unless he wants Pennsylvania to go from third to 50th. Christie has been a huge success on the talk shows. He's invited onto late night this and late night that. He's celebrated around the country as this tough talking, no BS, expense cutting guy. And then you look at what that's meant for jobs, and New Jersey is 50th in 2010. Pennsylvania is third. Chris Christie is a disaster for jobs. He's the number one job-killing governor in the entire nation. Why any governor would want to emulate Chris Christie is beyond me.
And worse yet, and you know, it was a very limited reported story, if you will, that he again, for another year, had chosen not to make pension contributions, pushing the problem down the road even further and making the crisis even bigger. You go back to the Christy Todd Whitman years where they didn't make payments, pushing it off down the road. This governor is doing the same thing, and I fear that our governor, our new governor, is going to do the same thing Tom Ridge did during the 90s and not contribute to the pensions and make things even worse down the road as we move forward.
Yeah, I mean, not paying the pension expense literally ought to put you in jail. It's stealing. You either cut the pensions and take the responsibility for cutting the pensions, stand up and say, we're not going to pay that expense because we just cut the pension, or you raise taxes to pay the expense, or you find out some other way to pay the expense. But not paying a pension expense is outright irresponsible. And it's amazing to me that any media would report that the Governor Christie had balanced the budget when he just to pass on paying a pension expense and didn't do the alternative, which would be to cut it. That would at least be honest. I'm completely opposed to it doing that and taking away an already vested pension. But at least that would be honest. And that's not what's going on.
No, not at all. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with John Hanger, former Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protections. You know, John, you look at everything that's going on in the world, places like Tunisia, places like Egypt, and we're hearing calls for more domestic production of oil. And, of course, we've got to stick more needles in the ground for natural gas. But along with this, shouldn't we be talking about how to get off the juice, maybe create some sustainable alternatives? I look at what happened in my school district in Carlisle, where they built a nice solar array that's going to pay dividends into the future, seemed to me to be smart investment. Shouldn't we be seeing a lot of this stuff and quickly?
We should, and to some extent we are. That Carlisle project is a great project. And by the way, it had stimulus money in it. It's one of the reasons why that project got built and why quite a number of Pennsylvanians earned a paycheck putting that up. I visited that project. Pennsylvania ranks second in the nation in solar jobs and third in solar projects. We have made huge jumps in renewable energy in Pennsylvania beyond solar. By the end of this year, we're going to have 20 operating wind farms. Another one was announced just today, which is going to put probably a couple hundred people to work at the wind farm constructing it. Also, it's going to employ other folks who have made the turbines. So renewable energy is growing rapidly. It needs to be accelerated. Governor Corbett actually has a great opportunity to build on success and move that forward. But I also got to tell you that renewable energy will do tremendously well, Rick, if it, in the next decade it meets all of the increased demand. The math here is not simple, or perhaps what we'd all want it to be. We're probably going to use about 15% more electricity over the next 10 years.
Right.
And if that increase was met completely by, let's call it renewable energy, that would be a tremendous decade for renewable energy. If we're going to get off the really dirty stuff, and we've got 100,000 megawatts of coal-fired power plants that are over 40 years old and have virtually no pollution control equipment on them, in the next 10 years, the only way to refuel those or to clean them up is really by moving to natural gas, and that gas is available here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But right now we're getting the worst of both worlds. We're producing a lot of gas, but we're still not replacing the Eisenhower administration old coal-fired power plants.
And you know, you said something a second ago, building on success. You know, I don't know how the governor is going to build on your successes from the past administration, having taken this bizarre no tax pledge. How can you build on the success of the past if you don't have the money to invest in it?
Well, that's right. You know, Chris Christie has shown what just austerity economics will do for you. If you don't make investments in workers, if you don't make investments in growing businesses, if you don't make investments in infrastructure, you end up as the number one job-killing governor in the United States, and your state ranks 50th in job creation. Smart investment is absolutely critical. There isn't a family or a business that's successful that doesn't engage in smart investment. That money may be invested in tuition at the community college or in learning a trade. That's called investment in yourself.
Yep.
Or it may be business investment in a piece of equipment. Maybe it's a new pickup truck. Or whatever. Businesses and families that succeed make smart investments. And it's absolutely critical in a very competitive world that state governments, as well as our national government, make smart investments. Of course, waste and fraud and abuse must be policed and must be cut out. And that's a never-ending job. But that's not a reason to turn your back on the other side, which is the critical need, vital need, to make smart investments, particularly in infrastructure and education.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, John, you know, I've talked to a couple of people who were working, some of the folks who are on the transition team, who they really thought they were going to go in, they were going to find this gold-plated door that had, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse written on it, and in that room would be a big hole where we were just burning money. Turns out they're not finding that. In fact, they're not even finding the mid-range fruit that they knew was there. It's kind of one of these things where, you know, it's one thing to go and campaign on, oh, we're gonna get rid of the Department of Waste, Fraud, and Abuse, but it's a whole other thing once you take the reins and you look at the books and you go, oh, it's not there.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. There is that no Department of Waste, Fraud, and Abuse. That's a great phrase. Of course, you can always do things better, but I will tell you, in the last 2 years of the Rendell administration, because times were very tight, cuts went deep. There were good expenditures that would make sense to make that were being cut because there just wasn't any money. When this country went off the cliff at the end of the Bush administration and the revenues collapsed, this state government had two budgets in a row that featured a lot of belt tightening. That's a euphemism. I mean, there was some significant reductions that really don't make sense, but had to be made. So, you know, we're now at year three, and if this governor comes in, as you say, and takes off the table some revenue options like a drilling tax, like perhaps taxing cigars or smokeless tobacco, things that, you know, actually every state in the union, including Kentucky, does, other than Pennsylvania. If he just ideologically won't consider the revenue side of the budget, then we're going to cut things that shouldn't be cut.
Yeah, but here's the thing, John. That's not in the Republicans' game plan. That's not in their narrative. Their narrative is it's all about the spending. It's all about the wasteful spending on those people. It has nothing to do with revenue, in their opinion. And I've yet to find a Republican to call me or call me out on what I've said. The reality is they've got it in their mind. It's all this wasteful spending on those people, those old people, the greedy people. That's what I keep hearing. It's nothing. We've got too much money, they say.
Well, I can tell you that that is absolutely false. The spending in Pennsylvania state government is already tight. We have one of the lowest ratios of state workers to population in the entire country. Most of the money that is raised through state taxes goes to really three things. One is education. About 40 to 50% of the local school district budgets across the state come from the state taxpayer. Second major item is nursing home expense through the Medicaid program. Are we going to put out on the street 85-year-old individuals who have outlived their...
Kick granny to the curb.
Yeah, is that what we're going to do? I guess the answer is maybe. I find that really breathtaking and hopefully unbelievable.
You're on your own, brother.
Yeah.
You're on your own.
And then the third big expense is we've got 58,000 people in state prisons. And certainly there are violent people in state prisons that I personally never want to see out on the streets again. But there are also people in state prisons that do not have a record of violence. And I think that is actually an area where we ought to be looking much more seriously.
Yeah, but that's going to cut into corporate profits, and we can't have that.
Well, there have been, at least in some states, a clear linkage between the incarceration rates and private prisons. Unfortunately, even in California, I think there's a case to be made that some of the incarceration rates that have gone on in California have a lot to do with the prison guards and their interests.
Well, to be honest, John, you don't have to look much further than, what is it, Luzerne County up there with the two judges that just got thrown in jail for themselves?
That is an example of
it's
horrendous. And I think whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, whether you're conservative or liberal, we ought to be able to unite around the principle that we shouldn't be spending a whole lot of money to incarcerate people that don't belong in jail. And certainly juveniles who have been railroaded is probably the single greatest example of somebody who shouldn't be in jail and a burden to the taxpayer.
Yeah, right there with you, John. John Hanger, former Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection. I appreciate your time. Look forward to having you back again real soon.
Thank you, Rick. Keep it up.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. A couple of things at play here. It has nothing to do with the budget. Because, you know, I heard Terzai say, we're going to get $2 billion. And then the little tiki tank across town said, we're going to get $1.7 billion. Then I heard another guy say, well, maybe $1.5 billion. Then I was listening to one of these Sunday talking head shows, and Senator Gordner said, we might get upwards of $1 billion. So what is it? I mean, every time I hear it, that number keeps coming down. And you'll remember I said from the beginning, $2 billion, they're not even going to get half of that. And now they're already hedging their bets all the way down to less than half. Pretty much exactly what I said.
And if you get $1 million, if you get $1 million with the numbers Terzai wants to throw out there, he's throwing out 850. That's only 850 million, which is less than half. And by the way, the last statement I heard, which just several days ago, Rick, he's not even talking about numbers anymore because he knows his numbers just don't prove the point. Now his position is, well, shouldn't be within the purview of government. Even though it has for the last couple of decades, it's worked well. Now, all of a sudden, it shouldn't be within the purview of government.
You know, the core government functions. I love that. You know, we went to D.C. last week, I've said it a couple of times, but as we were pulling into town, and I've never noticed this before because I wasn't looking for it, but, you know, in thinking about it, it's always been there. All the way into town, on every single street corner, every corner, there was souvenir T-shirts and liquor, dry cleaning and liquor, deli shop and liquor, everything you can imagine under the sun, whatever product you want, ice cream and liquor. Every store was a liquor store. I mean, every time you turn around, you were surrounded by liquor stores, and I kept going, is this our future in Pennsylvania? Is this the future of this ideology? And I looked at people who call themselves social conservatives, and I got to ask the question, do you want a liquor store on every corner? Do you want people panhandling outside the liquor store every single day? Because that's where we're heading.
That's exactly what happened in New Jersey, although they'll try to take the position, well, it's never resulted in an increase of crime. That's just an inaccurate statement. Drunken driving increased. Crime involving alcohol increased. Underage
domestic
drinking
violence.
Increased. Domestic violence, because what they did to make more money, the state said, hey, let's have a proliferation. And they did. And unfortunately, they were concentrated sometimes in areas where the lower end economy, economically. And it did result in domestic violence.
I mean, I was just amazed at it. We were everywhere we went. There was a store, New York deli sandwiches and liquor, souvenir T-shirts and liquor, right down the list. It was, I had never noticed it before because it's one of those things I wasn't looking for, but the first time I saw it, I started looking around. I'm going, wow, it is everywhere.
And I actually heard a proponent just yesterday, local talk show host that I like to listen to, and sometimes I know you don't, Rick, but. I was, she said, well, if it's late at night and I want to go get some whiskey, I want to be able to go to some place that's open at midnight. Is that what we want? Is that really what we want in this state? Whiskey at any hour, whiskey, readily available. Is that really what we want?
Yes.
And here's the irony, Rick. I'm convinced.
When I go.
They're telling us, well, Rick, we're going to sell to these wonderful mom and pops. Okay, let's say a couple of them. First of all, I don't know a lot of them that are going to come up with $1 million, but let's say there are a couple. Do you really think that they're going to be able to afford the variety of the state stores? 28,000 different spirits? How many do we need? Do we need 100,000 different spirits to say that my thirst as a consumer is satisfied? I mean,
it's not about
the argument's just, those are the arguments that some of them are saying. They're saying, at one time, I could, 15 years ago, and I've been in this state all my life, so I know a little bit about this issue. This is the second or third time in my lifetime they've come after it. And the last time was, we don't have enough variety. Well, you know what? The state stores have stepped up several times, and they've upgraded their selection. If you can't find in the state stores what they have, they'll actually go get it for you. So, I don't want to hear this nonsense that there's just not enough variety, because it is. It's there.
This is about greed. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make
that old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, at some point, I think the folks in this country have got to wake up. This past weekend, I don't know if you heard about it, but this past weekend, the billionaire brothers David and Charles Koch had their big powwow, you know, at one of those resort places, the Rancho La Palmas Resort and Spa, in the upscale desert town of Rancho Mirage. They did it. Why? Well, they did it to keep away from the protesters. They had their little gated communities. You know, they were all barricaded and bunkered in. But 1,000 people did show up on Sunday outside the resort to, you know, have their voices heard. In fact, Greenpeace flew a blimp over top saying we don't want any dirty Koch money. And I agree. But here's the thing. These are the people who are running the country. This meeting. Which we had talked about last year when we found out it was gonna happen. There was a lot of hoopla. They said they canceled it, and then, oh, gee, they didn't. So they had their little Tea Party powwow, if you will. And you look at, some of the folks who showed up. You had people like Eric Cantor. You had people like Herman Cain, conservative columnist. Folks who showed up to their meeting, Jingle Jangle Jindal of Louisiana. Jim DeMint, a whole bunch of people showing up to this, really what I'm thinking is a campaign donation powwow. This is where you go to, you know, to bow to the altar of money. Cause these are the people who have the big bucks. When you think about how Rush Limbaugh became Rush Limbaugh and Beck became Beck and all of the right wing media infrastructure got into place, you look at folks who went to this meeting. The big money. The people who write a $1 billion check to start a talk radio program. The people who write $1 million checks every year to keep the National Review afloat. The people who write all of these big checks to buy these crappy books that people don't write. You know, when Sarah Palin's crappy book comes out, mostly think tanks buy those and hand them out. Or they give them out with magazine subscriptions. Because they've figured out how the New York Times list works. If they buy 100,000 copies and just hand them out, bestseller, because it sold 100,000 copies. And that's where this money's coming from. And you get meetings like this, meetings of people who honestly and truthfully, they know what they want from government. They know how much they're willing to spend, and they know what they want.
And this, I don't know why we allow it as a people. You know, you have Supreme Court judges with Scalia and Thomas coming to these meetings, Rick. I mean, really? And then we wonder why we have decisions like we had last year, which basically opened the floodgates. Now we're supposed to treat corporate America as a person. And look what we have in our political process. Now, these are the same brothers that, behind the scenes, have funded efforts to go after Social Security and Medicare. So these people are very powerful. Behind the scenes, there's the hidden hand. These people are the true power structure in the right-wing movement.
And they've been doing it for years. I mean, the Koch brothers' father, you know, was one of the people behind, going after income tax. And I just find it remarkable that we're not paying attention to this. For me personally, again, you know, it comes down to the reality of, what my grandfather always said. If someone like the Koch brothers are willing to take a dollar out of their pocket to tell me I don't need something, I better dig in my pocket and get two to get it. Because at the end of the day, they're not going to do anything to help me. It's about them. You know, someone sent me a listener sent me a clip of Milton Friedman talking about greed and why greed was good. You know, the Gordon Gekko frame. You know, greed is good. We're all greedy. We all pursue our best interests. That's what's great about capitalism. And to a point, I agree. And on a simplistic level, he's right. But at a point where you're the Koch brothers, which I'm not sure how you get K O C-H as Coke, but I always thought it was Koch.
I always thought it was Koch, too.
But, you know, whatever. If you're a billionaire, you can pronounce your name any way you want.
And if you're a poor Jewish guy who happens to be mayor of New York, it's Koch. So
there you go. I don't know that he was poor, but
well, he was originally.
He wasn't one of these guys.
I'm sure.
But you look at the money that they've poured into this stuff, and for me, again, it comes back down to how much. How much is enough? Meg Whitman spent $144 million of her own dollars to get a $300,000 a year job. Why? Because there's a payoff in the end. Bloomberg spent $260 million to get a $225,000 a year job. Why? Because of the power. The ability to help your buddies. And that's what these meetings are to me. You know, there's, you know, the Bilderbunds, everyone says, oh, it's a big grand conspiracy, and it doesn't really exist. It exists. These people come together. They conspire. They think about how are we going to make the world good for us against them. We don't have these big powers. We can't afford to go to these resorts. We can't afford to have these kind of meetings. And I think we better figure out how do we begin to organize? How do we get you and me, the working people of this country, together? You know, labor unions used to do that. I remember a guy, Dick Boyd, you know him too.
Mm-hmm.
Super great guy. Told me a story that when he was a kid, his father used to take him to meetings under the bridge at midnight because it was illegal to be a union member back when he was a kid. Now, Dick's got to be, what, 90 years old now?
He's probably in his 80s.
Probably right about 90. His father, as a kid, would take him under the bridge to these meetings, and they would meet in secret because if anybody found out, their life was over. And, in fact, he wasn't even allowed to tell his mother that they went because the mother would have gone hog wild on the father. But the father understood that you have to join together. It's not about being an individual. It's about being part of the group. And they built a solid middle class, a powerful middle class. And it's these people, the Kochs and the Mellon Scaifes and the Coors and the Mars and all of those big families with the big money, the Waltons, the Olins, all of them. It's those folks who have funded every attack on working people and have fought back. Because understand, they were the ones who the money came from. They were the ones who were expected to pay living wages. They were the ones who were expected to help the poor because they had the resources. And why do you think they're doubling down right now? Why do you think they're spending so much money on the Freedom Works and the Americans for Prosperity and the whole Tea Twizzler movement? Why do you think that is? Because we've got massive budget shortfalls, and they've got massive budget surpluses. So the logical place to go is go where the money is, not destroy what you already have. And that's pretty simple to me, Jack.
I think you're right on that, Rick. These guys have been for decades and decades and decades trying to push their agenda. I mean, let's be honest, since FDR and since the 60s and 70s Great Society programs, they saw this country going the wrong way, and now they see the opportunity, and they will spend unlimited amounts of money to pursue their political agenda. They see that, you know, this is the time where there's an opportunity, and they will do everything to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and I'm just not getting how my working class friends, how people who, like me, get up every day, go to work, punch a clock, collect a paycheck at the end of the week, aren't getting it. You know, I look at the guy we've put into the governor's mansion. Massive. You wait. We're going to see massive handouts to the natural gas industry. They're going to walk away from here very wealthy, much like the coal industry did for generations in the past. Why? Because they had the financial clout. They had the money to put into elections. They had the money to turn public opinion. Why do you think we're still seeing Range Resource ads on TV? And oh, how wonderful they are! They're just so wonderful. You know, I farming's a hobby now. I don't even farm anymore. At least that's what the commercials are telling us, that things are so wonderful. Why do you think that is? It's about changing your mind. It's about influencing the way you think. It's about propaganda. Trying to tell you that up is down. And I look at this industry, and I'm seeing us going right back to what happened during the big coal boom. where our environment is destroyed, where we're going to have, you and I are going to pay to clean this mess up.
Well, now the message from the other side is, Rick, well, you know, they're benevolent and on their own. They're repairing the roads. They're paying for the repairing the roads. And gee, they're actually, you know, they're paying taxes at the local level. They're doing everything possible. At least they say that. But are they? I don't think so. They're getting away cheap.
Understand, building a little access road.
Which helps them.
Which helps them.
Which helps them.
On taxes that they're already
paying. Which they help damage.
We're right back after this. But Jeanette Smith from the Interfaith Worker Justice. Stick around.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. A New York City councilman is being scrutinized by prosecutors and the public for conflicting statements regarding an allegation that sanitation workers came to him and complained that they were under orders by their union to slow down snow removal cleanup in late December to protest budget cuts. The allegation by City Councilman Dan Holleran led to a media firestorm directed at unionized city and state workers. Holleran originally told CNN that after the workers called him, he invited them into his offices to sit down and talk about the situation. However, a spokesman for Holleran told the New York Daily News on Friday that the councilman only spoke to the workers briefly before sending them to find a different attorney. Holleran invoked attorney-client privilege when meeting with prosecutors and has refused to reveal the names of the sanitation workers. Elected officials in New York City are not allowed to provide unpaid services for city-related work according to ethics rules. The New York Times wrote last week that investigators have been unable to find any other workers willing to admit knowledge of the slowdown plot. As union construction workers struggle to get back to pre-recession employment levels, they're stressing the benefits of highly skilled labor. Doug Cunningham files this report.
In construction today, everybody wants to build faster, better, safer, and cheaper. In St. Louis, Union Construction can deliver on those goals. Jim Lamantia is the director of PRIDE, Productivity and Responsibility Increased Development. Lamantia says it's because Union Construction is highly skilled and productive. He says the I-64 project in St. Louis was a prime example.
They met the schedule. In fact, they came in several months ahead of schedule, and they also came in several million dollars below budget. Once you get to the point where you are a highly trained individual, then the cost of your services can be as high as it is in St. Louis, and it still doesn't add to the cost of the project.
Lantia says a study of highly technical medical building projects showed that union construction in St. Louis was lower than similar project costs in many places around the country.
Ford's 2010 profits exceeded the company's expectations, reporting income of $6.6 billion, nearly double the profits of 2009. The high profits will mean bonuses for workers in the shape of profit-sharing checks. 40,600 hourly workers will receive a check of nearly $5,000 in March.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by ULICO and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, one of the things we talk about quite often is the issue of wage theft. And, you know, I think there's this misconception out there that there are all these laws out there to protect us. that there's, you know, the federal government's watching, the states are watching, the local government's watching to protect us. The reality is that's not quite true, and that's why I've asked Jeanette Smith from the South Florida Interfaith Worker Justice, SFWIWJ.org, or just it'll be linked at our site at therickSmithShow.com. I've asked Jeanette to come talk to us. Jeanette, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, I'm looking at this thing down that's going on down by you guys now. I had thought you'd passed a wage theft ordinance in Miami-Dade County. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. We did pass it. In fact, February 18th will be 1 year since we did pass it. It was fully implemented finally in November of last year. We are now facing a couple of challenges, and all starting from the same group, the Florida Retail Federation. They're trying to constitutionally challenge the ordinance in Miami-Dade County, and they were recently quoted in the Florida Independent as going to a new representative, he did again in January in the Florida legislature, and bringing the issue to him and writing the legislation for him, and he's now trying to present a bill that would preempt our local ordinance.
And under what grounds is he pursuing this?
I believe it's called the fair. I think it's like the guaranteed wage statute, something like that. One of those really positive sounding things.
Sure.
And he says that it would be a problem to have 67 different laws in Florida, all the different counties, and so it would be better that the state were in charge of this issue, and that any existing ordinances be stricken and that no more be prevented. The only problem with that is that's all it says. He doesn't actually say how the state would do that, and Florida holds the dubious distinction of being the only state in the country without a state-level Department of Labor.
Well, that's good. I mean, then slavery could almost be legal.
I think it might be.
I mean, if you don't have anybody enforcing what few labor laws are on the books, I would think that that's open season.
It's sad. It's really sad because we have a minimum wage law and absolutely no one to enforce it. And I think that most Floridians are not aware of that until they end up in a situation where they're not paid and have nowhere to go.
Let's talk about that for a second, because I don't think it's just people in Florida. I think it's people in Ohio, Pennsylvania, all over this country who have no idea, A, what wage theft is, and B, that it's going on and in the amount that I've seen statistically that is going on.
I think you're completely correct, and I think Kim Bobo actually refers to it as a crime wave that no one talks about. And what's been actually amazing here, and we always knew that, for example, it's definitely an equal opportunity injustice across the board. Doesn't matter immigrant, non-immigrant, the types of work, it happens across the board. But what was interesting to us is how quickly, when we passed our ordinance, and Small Business Development is the agency that's administering the ordinance, the variety of cases they saw. I mean, they saw low-wage workers, restaurant workers. They also very quickly saw architects, telemarketers, even an accountant.
Wow.
They really saw it across the board.
So explain to me, to our listeners, what exactly wage theft is. What's your definition of it?
Wage theft would be that you've worked and you haven't been paid for the hours that you've worked. You haven't been paid properly. It could be that you weren't paid overtime. It could be that you were misclassified as an independent contractor when you're actually an employee, or it could be in most egregious cases that you simply weren't paid at all.
You know, because, you know, when I've had these conversations with people, and it invariably it always comes back to, well, it's probably just those illegal people. It's just them. And understand, they get screwed probably more than anybody. But it's just not undocumented workers.
No, and we found that immediately, and people will probably think South Florida and immigrants, but that's who it is. And immediately the SBD found that that was not the case. And some of the heart-wrenching stories are when you hear about the young architect whose parents were immigrants, who was born in this country, who went to college, who was trying to, as she said, she wanted to do more than her parents did. She wanted to take it to that next level professionally. And then her first job, she's thrilled when she gets it, and then within a few months, she's not getting paid. And it was heartbreaking. There's a telemarketer, so a husband and wife worked at the same place. Them not getting paid that month was the difference between being able to pay their rent and not pay their rent. And there were 5 workers in that same situation. And it was amazing to them then that all it took was for the county to send a letter and give notice to the employer that a claim had been filed, and within 2 weeks they had been paid. So it does make a difference when government stands up as well.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, you know, what would someone do in that situation? What would a worker do who, you know, they're being cheated, they know they're being cheated, what recourse do they have? And then, you know, I got to ask the next question, which if you do go ahead and you do go to the government or somebody, do you have any fear of reprisal? Pennsylvania here, I'm not sure about Florida, but Pennsylvania is an at-will state, which means your employer can fire you for any reason. Is that some kind of retaliation that you could expect?
That's the exact same thing that Florida is, a right-to-work state or a right-to-fire state, as the case may be. And that's actually one of the regrets we have, is that we don't have a retaliation clause, because it was the first one of its kind drafted here in Florida, and we wish we had included that. Technically, there's criminal laws in the books about, for example, threatening a witness, et cetera, in a case. But it would be difficult to show. It would be difficult to show. So that's one of the things we'd like to see changed when the opportunity arises. We'd like to add that.
Yeah, so basically, what other legislation do you think we would need? Because I think that's a good start for me personally. And now Florida is a little different than Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is not a right to work, or, as you pointed out, a right to be fired state yet. But that may be coming. What other types of things would you be suggesting?
In what respect?
To legislation moving that you haven't gotten down there in Florida yet.
I'd like to have a State Department of Labor, but, you know, if wishes were horses, they say. We need, the wage ordinance is important. I think we need to see those things move throughout the other counties. Tomorrow in Palm Beach, for example, is the first reading of an ordinance in Palm Beach County. And we're getting a significant amount of pushback on that from the same folks that are trying to threaten the Miami-Dade County ordinance. They've gone so far as to actually suggest that a different route, using the existing legal aid rather than an ordinance, and that they will help pay for legal aid to do it. And I tend to wonder, if you're willing to put out money to keep the laws the way they are right now, what is it that you're so worried about with the wage theft ordinance?
Well, they're worried that it's more rampant than you've even found out.
Oh, and that's exactly the case. And they did the same thing with our commissioner, when she wanted to pass it the day before the vote. They called and wanted her to postpone the vote. And she quite simply said to them that, did they pay their employees? And they said yes. Did they pay them a check to balance? And they said no. And then she says, what are you worried about? And went ahead and passed the ordinance. I think we need that general attitude throughout Florida. Our current governor is pushing the idea of jobs. Jobs, jobs, jobs. But he's also saying that we would do so by lessening regulations for businesses. I hear that, and I think wage theft. That's a concern.
You know, here at the end of the day, I can create all the jobs. I can create millions of jobs tomorrow. Granted, you'll only be paid a buck an hour, if that. But there's still jobs.
Right, right, right. So I think it's a matter of what kind of jobs do we want to create. We want to create good jobs.
So what can we do to change things? What can we do to make things better?
Education, voting, speaking up, letting your commissioners know what's happening. I think sharing your stories about wage theft is important. I think more people realizing what wage theft is and looking at their own situations, because I've not been in a room full of people that when I define what wage theft is, the hands don't go up and people realize that they've experienced it as well. And I think that's important.
You know, when I think of wage theft, immediately I go to Walmart. I immediately think of some of the stories, like up in Connecticut, where people were being clocked out and they were working a half an hour after their start time. They were being clocked back in for lunch when they were working. All of those things, that constitutes wage theft in my mind.
It does. It does. Shaving hours is definitely wage theft.
And from what I've, you know, from some of the lawsuits that I've seen, it's fairly rampant, which is... Amazing.
They say in some of the studies, there was a study done in Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles in the fall that said that 68% of workers low-wage workers that were interviewed studied reported some sort of wage abuse the week before. That is rampant. When restaurant workers in New Orleans, 100% of restaurant workers reported experiencing wage theft. They'd done the same studies in nursing homes as well. We did a study in the plant nurseries here in the southern part of Miami-Dade County, the same type of thing. And we've created an environment where an employer will admit to wage theft and will say that he has no choice because he's competing against somebody else who's committing wage theft, and it's the only way he can compete. So that's the type of environment we've set. So one of the things I think when you talk about a wage theft ordinance is you're talking about something that protects workers, their families, but you're also really talking about a pro-business bill Because if you're a good employer, you should want a wage theft ordinance on the books because you don't want to have to compete against the bad employer, the unethical employer, who's using wage theft as a business model.
Excellent point. And for me, at the end of all of this, it comes down to workers having the right to collective bargaining, something that, you know, like in Florida, not something that happens often, but does happen.
Yes, it does happen. It does happen, and we have had some great cases down here. But I have to say, the most exciting thing for me is that despite what they're trying to push back on, we do have a wage theft ordinance, and it's not often that I get to say Miami-Dade and labor and cutting edge all in the same sentence. So that's pretty exciting.
That's beautiful. Jeanette Smith, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much, South Florida Interfaith Worker Justice. You can get to their website from our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Jeanette's name. It'll take you right there. Thanks again. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
When dancing with the devil, never fool yourself into thinking that you're in the lead. That would be my 50 cents worth of advice to President Obama as he rushes ahead with the remake of his presidency into a Clinton-esque corporate enterprise. Following last fall's congressional elections, he immediately began blowing kisses to CEOs and big business lobbyists, and he's now filled his White House dance card with them. First came Bill Daley, the Wall Street banker and longtime corporate lobbyist. In early January, Obama brought him to the White House ball to be his chief of staff, gatekeeper, and policy coordinator. Then Obama tapped Jeffrey Immelt to lead his Council on Jobs, which is supposed to, quote, encourage the private sector to hire Americans and invest in American competitiveness. This is a bizarre coupling, for Immelt is CEO of General Electric and has been a leader in shipping American factories and jobs to Asia and elsewhere. Today, fewer than half of GE's workers are in our country. As an AFL-CIO official notes, highly globalized companies don't have the same interests as the United States. There is no company more emblematic of this than GE. In his recent State of the Union speech, Obama offered only cold comfort to the millions of Americans who are unemployed or barely employed, saying blandly that, quote, the rules have changed. Well, yes. And who changed them? Self-serving CEOs like Jeffrey Immelt, that's who. America's working families, who make up our endangered middle class, have a right to expect Obama to fight for rules that are fair to them and our country, not meekly accept rules that have been skewed by an elite corporate class to profit them alone. Instead, our president is waltzing with the devil. This is Jim Hightower saying, he's rebranding his presidency, all right. It's becoming Obama Incorporated.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.biz.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raising but the wages. Everything's raising but the wages. Gasoline, groceries, and our hazes. Everything's raising but the wages. Everything's raising but the wages.
Yeah, especially when they're stealing it from you. Yeah, you look at some of these stories, and you know, I'm sure you could go on for days about the stories that people have to tell about being robbed and stolen from. But for me, it always comes back down to the fact that if we had, 35% union density in this country, if we had folks who were part of a union, if it were easier for that to happen, maybe you wouldn't see these stories. Maybe you wouldn't hear these stories as often. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, people would be empowered at the workplace. Just maybe. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Helen on line one. How are we doing tonight, Helen?
I'm doing fine. I heard you talking about the taxes that they might be paying for the gas companies. I listened to the Republican House Committee hearing that they had. I guess it was Wednesday, and I was listening to it yesterday. They do not pay any kind of tax on the minerals that they extracted. Coal, limestone, in fact, this was mentioned by, I believe it was the people that are county commissioner group and the township commissioners group and the borough group. They were all testifying to the fact that the gas companies have been, because of a court case in 2002, do not have to pay real estate. Whatever it is we pay, the school taxes that we pay, that everybody's talking about having them cut, they don't pay that, but all the other minerals that are extracted have to pay that kind of a tax.
Yeah, we've let them completely off the hook with this bizarre idea that if we tax them, they'll go somewhere else.
Well, it also said that we have a lot of an incredible amount of cost. Our probation department and parole department, because they have a lot of people coming up here with the gas companies from Texas that are on parole. So they have to be transferred and covered by our parole people. And we're not being reimbursed for that.
You're kidding me.
I was sitting there listening to this. Our parole department our corrections department can tell them, we're not going to do it. Don't send them. They have that power, and they had it, you know, this has been happening under Rendell, and I'm sure it's going to continue to happen under Corbett, and they're not paying for it.
And these to me, should be the jobs that people here should be getting.
And there were two old county commissioners who were, you know, they were practically kissing the gas companies. I guess they think they're going to get something out of it. The guy from Bradford County and Tioga County, they asked them how much the companies were helping them with the volunteer fire companies. Oh, they're helping us with training. Helping us. These people that are volunteer firemen have to come out and take care of all of the oil well blowouts. And in fact, on Tuesday before this in Wellsboro, there had been a horrific one. And they had the fireman, the head of some fireman's group, he was saying that they need money for heavier equipment because the kind of equipment they have is just for homes and farm fires. It's not the kind of thing that you can use for these oil well explosions and whatever. And the companies, they're giving them some, but they're not giving very much. And I sent you an email about this show that I found called Boomtown. It was on the Science Channel, and it's all about the Bakken oil field up in North Dakota. And it's the same kind of thing happening there. It's just incredible. These companies go all over, they extract our mineral rights, and then they leave us a mess.
I mean, it's amazing, and we're just not getting it. And to be honest, we have a history of this, a very strong past for us to look back to and go, these are the mistakes we don't want to make again when you look at the coal industry.
Well, with the firemen, I'm thinking if my husband was a volunteer fireman, I would tell him absolutely no way, shape, or form are you going to go out, because the insurance policy you have is not going to cover if he's killed that way, and you have to go and sue these people to get the wrongful death or whatever kind of suit you're going to get to help you have the money for your children for the rest of your life should something horrible happen to your volunteer fireman husband. I'm sure that there are some women that are volunteer fire women, but or EMT people, but they're not being paid by these companies. They're expecting the people across the northern tier to do this free. It's just incredible. Nice people finished last, and I was at a gun show yesterday and was talking to some guy that was selling T-shirts, and I got into it objecting to his anti-Obama shirts. But he said Luzerne County, a lot of their leases were canceled because Luzerne County just doesn't have as much of this, you know, gas that they're fracking as other places. So Luzerne County, where he comes from, is just looks like it's going to be out of the running for making these riches. I said, well, why aren't you up in arms about your water quality? And he was more interested in blaming Obama for the problems. Nice. I don't understand it.
I do. It's called simplistic thinking. Helen, I appreciate the call. As
sure.
Always. Thank
bye-bye.
You. Yeah, and look, you know, the more I try and wrap my head around folks who think that way, the more I realize sometimes you just have to stop. These people who, well, we're not getting the gas drilling here and it's Obama's fault. They go, how's that possible? The industry decided that right now, it's cheaper to go drill somewhere else. So that's where they're going to go. Eventually they're going to get around to you because understand, it's under your feet. Which I just, I gotta be honest, I've never gotten this mentality that, oh, if we don't give it away and right now, if we don't give it away to them, they won't take it.
Well, I mean, you say that, Rick, but what's the message from the Republicans? Well, you don't want to push too hard because they're not quite sure if they're going to stay. And gee whiz, we don't want to kill the golden goose. I mean, what nonsense that is. All they have to do is look at what happened down in West Virginia. That state didn't put up with their nonsense.
Yeah, but I mean, even there, I mean, to me, I think you need to have even a much stronger gas tax than they have there. We have nothing.
Have nothing. I mean, if you look at the numbers the last 2 years, we got goose eggs from the state budget. You're talking about $1 billion. And then this administration, who doesn't want to tax them, is complaining about lack of funds. It just defies logic.
Amazing stuff. The protests in Egypt continued today for the seventh day in a row. The pro-democracy demonstrators are organizing a March of Millions. That, I guess, is going to take place sometime tomorrow. What we've been seeing is financial markets dipping across the Middle East. Financial prognosticators are trying to divine what continued unrest will mean for the rest of the economies of the Middle East and the price of oil. I'm telling you, the price of oil is going to go up because any excuse that they have to jack that up, they're going to use. Any excuse to get into your pocket, they're going to use. One of the driving factors behind the protests is the decade-long stagnation of the Egyptian economy and a growing sense of inequality. Understand that Egypt, according to the CIA World Factbook, is one of the most unequal countries in the world. They're 90th most unequal. Now, we here in the U.S., we have the wonderful reputation of being 42nd. So they're way down the list. You've got Tunisia, 62nd in this unequal distribution category. Yemen, 76. So you're seeing these countries that have been really areas. You've got dictators and an investor and a wealth class inside their walls, inside their gated communities, reaping all of the benefits, and a massive poverty class. Now, look, you know, I've been saying we're heading towards this for a while. You go back to what we were talking about in the last segment about the Koch brothers and their big secret, super secret meeting out in the desert. Not much difference in my mind when you have these people who've walled themselves off from the rest of society. You know, one of the things I used to hear is, well, you know, you can go have dinner in the same restaurant a billionaire can have dinner in. Really? Do you think? Do you think I'm ever going to get to sit next to Warren Buffett? The answer is no. And this is the stuff that's going on. And I'm, you know, for the longest time, I've been saying this, Jake, when are we in this country? And I thought the Tea Party was it when it first started. I really did. I thought this is going to be that spark. These are the angry people who are your age, who are ticked off that their 401k was cutting off the jobs that they thought were going to last until retirement were gone. We've seen manufacturing leave the country. We've seen all of these jobs that were supposed to be those middle class jobs of the future going away. So you had all this anger, all these people ticked off, and I was one of them. Yes, take to the streets, demand. And then they started going, it's the government's fault. And you go, really? Did I miss something?
Well, I agree with you. I had some hope too, but already. They show signs of being bought off by the system. If I can make a comment on Egypt, something that really disappointed me, actually just coming to the show tonight, I heard the president's secretary, a press secretary, say, you know, when we sent these signals, we're not really taking sides. And I'm thinking, well, why aren't you? Why aren't you taking the side of the Egyptian people who simply want more freedom, who want, to the degree, and I understand that their interpretation of a democratic government is probably a little bit different than ours, but they want a better way of life. They want probably a representative democracy if possible. Why aren't they taking sides? Now, I understand behind the scenes, Rick, there was a clear signal sent to the real power structure in Egypt, and that's the military. And they were basically given the message, you know, the way you react to this crisis, it's going to have a direct bearing on what we do as a nation and how much money we give to you. And I think behind the scenes, I think most in power in this country are wishing that we can somehow get Mubarak out. And I think this concern by the right wing in this country, a few of them are saying, well, do we really want to do that? The Muslim Brotherhood, and from what I understand, the Muslim Brotherhood is not that powerful and has been pretty much under control. And I think the best thing that can happen is Mubarak in a peaceful way just leave somehow. And that could happen, depending on what the key is. The real power right now is in the military.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to step down out of his own goodwill. I just don't think. Before we take a break, let's take one call. We got Mike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Mike?
Hi, Rick. How you doing?
I'm good. Yourself?
Hey, been watching Egypt. Kind of interesting.
I have been.
Haven't decided whether it's going to go our way or another way, and I'm not sure what our way is, really.
Yeah, I'm not either. I got to be honest, I don't know all the ins and outs. I don't know all the factions as much as I should. I'm still studying it and still trying to come up with a position yet.
Yeah. I'm familiar with Mohammed Faraday because he was the director of the IAEA for a while.
Right.
So he has good credentials. One of the things I have heard that's making its way around the quote-unquote patriot community right now is they're circulating that China is acquiring free trade zones all over America, and that those zones are going to allow them to build manufacturing infrastructure here but staff it with their people.
Really? No, I have not heard that.
And it will be exempt from most of our labor laws, tax laws, and other laws. And so I went to Google when I first heard it. It sounded a little silly to me. Looked it up, and there they are.
Is this where they're buying up our old Navy bases?
Well, I don't know where it's Navy bases, but I think the one I heard about mentioned to me was out west, and it was like 30,000 acres that they acquired, and within that 30,000 acre, the United States has basically said, you don't have to follow our environmental or labor laws or anything else.
I'm going to have to look into that.
It's literally a free trade zone. And I guess I'd like to see, you know some pretty expert people that have some history. And from what I did a quick Google search on it, it's not a new idea. They exist in other parts of the world. But I came across one thing that said crime flourishes in these zones because they're able to do counterfeiting and things like that without much enforcement.
I will definitely look into that, Mike.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Talk to you later, Rick.
All right, thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Mickey Boltz from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AppsMe13.org. We are AppsMe.
We make history happen!
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Rebuilding America. It's Manufacturing Monday.
Hello, Detroit. All the workers, let me thank you for your time. You work for 40 hours for a living. Just to send it on down the line. Hello, Pittsburgh. Steel mill worker, let me thank you for your time. You work for 40 hours for a living. Just to send it on.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Today, back in 1995, President Bill Clinton authorized $20 billion to be loaned to Mexico because the peso had basically collapsed. Clinton sidestepped Congress, because he asked for $50 billion. They said, no. He said, well, we've got to help them out. They're going to be our big trading power. So he authorized the Treasury Department to issue a loan through the Exchange Stabilization Fund. This was the first time the fund had been used to help stabilize a foreign country. Understand, this was, we had to keep them propped up. We had to keep the Mexicans propped up so we could pass NAFTA, so that NAFTA could take effect and we could, well, send all of our jobs down there and have Mexicans do it. And if you remember, the ideology of the time was, you know, we can help them grow their economy and they could be like us in a couple of years. How's that worked out for us? I would say not so well. NAFTA has been a huge, huge job destroyer, and the little crazy guy with the big ears, he was right. There was a giant, giant sucking sound. But now looking back, we made mistakes. How do we go forward? I've asked Mickey Bolt from the Alliance for American Manufacturing to come on and talk to us. Mickey, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Rick. How are you doing this evening?
I am good. You know, I'm looking at, you know, some of the rhetoric going on about the Chinese and how we're, you know, we're still holding on. We're still the world's largest manufacturer of value-added goods. I question for how long, but they're spinning this in an interesting way, that we're creating more today, we're building more here in the U.S. than we did back in the 50s, and we're doing it with half the people. An interesting spin.
Well, that is true, and part of the reason for that is the companies that were left here. I mean, when the Koreans and the Japanese and that started coming through in the 60s and that, the companies that were not very efficient, they had to close down. They couldn't keep up. But the companies that are left now are world-class quality companies, and they can compete with all the companies, all the other manufacturers throughout the world, except for China, because China, their government, subsidizes their industry. They manipulate their currency and to keep it well below ours, and plus they dump products in here. So when you have, I mean, these companies now are very efficient, and we look at that as that's progress here in this country, where we actually lose manufacturing jobs and actually produce more goods. But that was supposed to be the promise, that we would get higher pay. But now the Chinese are coming in because their government's subsidizing it. It doesn't matter if you have the most efficient company in the world. You're competing against all the resources of the Chinese government.
And not only that, the fact that they can pass laws to mandate domestic content requirements, to mandate that if you're going to put solar, build solar panels, they have to be built there. A lot of things that we're not doing for some odd reason.
No, we don't. We allow ours to be open, open bidding and everything else. They require a certain percentage, 70, 80% to be
made in China. But isn't that smart policy?
Well, we know it isn't smart policy because we're losing all the green jobs. We're losing it.
From their position. I mean, if I got to be honest, I wish we would do some of that stuff. I wish we would say, you know, the company that's making those big windmills, they should be made here, so we put them up right here.
Well, I mean, it's wonderful policy for them. And they're getting, I mean, they've gone in the last 10 years from a third world country to almost the most biggest manufacturing country in the world. And they've done it very smartly. They've cheated on the trade laws throughout the world, and we've let them.
You know, and I've said this a number of times. I don't mind losing. I don't mind getting beat up in a fight. I don't mind taking my lumps. But I don't see this as a fight with the Chinese. There was no. I don't think there was a competition. I think we gave it away. I think we gave away our manufacturing base so that a handful of people could get really rich.
And that's true. Some people have gotten very, very rich, and it's pathetic at the cost of many jobs and many people dropping out of the middle class. And what it does to everything. And now we see, as we saw, the people getting angry about their taxes going up and supporting more and more people. And this was the safety net that these people now, the Tea Party people, are talking about entitlements. This was just to catch somebody and help them out so they can get another job and get back in and be a productive member. Well, there aren't jobs for them to get back to. And now they're saying, well, these programs that were set in place to help people are entitlements. And that's wrong. We got to quit looking at that. We got to start taking the problem of putting people back to work in this country, and that would solve almost all these problems that are coming down the road at us.
You know, Mickey, one of the things I've always said is I'm not so worried about our budget deficits, and we're going to talk about that later in the program. I'm concerned mainly about our trade deficits. If we had even balanced trade like we do with the majority of the world, we wouldn't have a lot of the problems that we have. If we had even balanced trade, I don't think we'd be running the debt that we have now.
No, we wouldn't be. And that, I mean, that when we look at that, the trade issue so skewed against us. I mean, that's our wealth leaving this country, along with our jobs and everything else. But I thought it was interesting. I mean, the way you opened the program up, talking about Mexico and how the jobs went there through NAFTA, and then the second, you know, after a while, you talked to me about their different trade, what China does, and their manufacturing policies. It's something interesting just came down in the last two or three weeks up in our area. I'm from Mercer County, Pennsylvania, that Mercer County up there, and we have Reznor heaters. Now, Reznor, they make the heaters for garages and that, and they've been making heaters up there for well over 100 years, and they have been pulling lines out and taking them to Mexico since NAFTA started. They've been pulling things out, but they've still manufactured the heaters and that up in Mercer. Something just came down just recently, and again, here we go with the way our government and everything is doing this. They've reached agreement that they're going to get $2.5 million from the state of Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, to tear down their manufacturing facility. And if there's any legacy problems of asbestos or something else, they're going to clear that up for them. Now they have to match another $2.5 million or so. So they're going to have a factory that they're going to tear down, that they don't have to pay property tax. If there's any kind of PCBs or you know, asbestos.
You and I have to cover it.
They're gonna, yep, we're gonna pay to clean that up. They're gonna ship all the manufacturing jobs to Mexico. All of them. They're gonna be gone. They're gonna build a 6,000 square foot, they say it's a research and development place. Now that, I know some homes that are 6,000 square feet. That's the size of a 3-car garage or maybe a 4-car garage. This is what we're getting out of $2.5 million from the state. That all those jobs are going down to Mexico. And it just does not seem right. It seems stupid. It does not seem right that the state would be putting money into something like this to ship the jobs to Mexico.
A lot of this stuff doesn't make a lot of sense to me, Mickey. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Mickey Bolt from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. AmericanManufacturing.org is their website. And, you know, one of the other things that makes no sense to me at all is the president just announced a new job czar, if you will. this guy who's supposed to head up the committee to find jobs for people, this Jeffrey Immelt, the CEO of GE. To me, again, you know, last week I beat the president up pretty bad over some of the decisions he made, this one in particular, because GE is one of the largest outsourcers of jobs in the country, yet you've got this guy in charge of your gold-plated commission to create jobs. And he's been creating jobs, hundreds of thousands of jobs in China.
Exactly. And we've seen this. I mean, we sit here and look at, you know, again, time and time again, this administration is putting the fox in charge of the hen house. And we sit there and look at it, and this isn't the first time. It's been happening more and more and more. This president, although we keep hearing about this leftist policy that he has.
I'm still waiting for it.
I'm still waiting for one bill that comes down. It's a leftist bill or something like that. But he's moving further and further toward the Chamber of Commerce and you know, to the right. When it comes to jobs, you see, he just came out with a new bill about trying to help small businesses. And I mean, that's all well and good, and we want to do that, but we want to help all businesses. We want to help all manufacturing. And that means that we're not going to give $2.5 billion for them to tear down factories, move the jobs to Mexico, so they don't have to pay property tax on it. We should be getting more value for our money. We saw that with the bailout of GM and Chrysler. There should have been something in there, not that they're going to tear down dealerships and buy more goods from China to build the cars. This is about jobs. We're going to bail you out, but we want to keep you employing Americans.
You know, at the end of all this, and I'm against all the bailouts. I'm against giving money to corporations. I'm against all of that. What I'm in favor of doing is saying, okay, well, you provide solar panels. We're going to buy a bunch of them, and we're going to put them on all of our buildings. You produce a car that gets such and such a gas mileage, we're going to buy a whole bunch of them. We're going to keep you in business by buying your product, not by handing you a check. To me, that's the smart way of going about it. Instead of having these big check ceremonies where you got politicians up there with big smiles, shaking each other's hands, and my tax dollars are going to who knows where, not creating jobs, but to making rich people richer, I think at some point we have to stop. And one of the few things I agree with Corbett on, the idea of the big cardboard, ending the big cardboard checks.
Well, I agree with that. And I've heard some other people talk about when we look at our, you know, foreign policy, where we may give Egypt $10 million to buy trucks or Tunisia or someplace like that. Don't give them a check for $10 million. Get two or three boatloads pulling up and roll the trucks on that we make in America. Spray paint all over, made in the United States, and ship them over there and give them the goods that we make here, not the check that they could buy from somebody else.
You know, why don't we have policy leaders who see this?
I don't know why we don't have people. Well, we know why. If you go and talk to them, they'll sit there, I don't care who it is, and they'll agree with you that this makes sense. But when we leave the office, they do what they do to protect their interests.
They pick up the phone and they dial for campaign cash.
Exactly. And unfortunately, it takes a ton of money to run a campaign nowadays.
Yeah. I got a couple more minutes. I want to talk about this conference that's coming up next week. I've gone to the last several years to the Blue-Green Alliance's Good Jobs, Green Jobs Conference. I understand you guys will be there.
We will be there, yes.
You'll have your tent set up.
We'll
have one
involved.
Of those little plastic windmills like you had last year?
I'm not sure what they're going to have there, but yeah, we'll try everything.
I wanted to steal that last year, but they didn't leave it. They didn't leave it unguarded. But talk a little bit about what the Good Jobs Green Job Conference is.
Well, this is something that we're trying to push. I mean, just because they're green jobs doesn't mean they have to be minimum wage. They can be good jobs because we know they're going to need plumbers and welders and everything else. And that's the industry we're trying to push. That's the future. And that's what we want to see here. And that's what we're doing. I mean, for instance, one of the things that we talk about here in Pennsylvania is, we make a light bulb that meets the government's requirements for energy savings. It's made by Sylvania. It's made of halogen. And this is the first lighting technology they gave to union workers, because they actually make the halogen crystal that goes inside the light bulb. They make that by the auto workers in Kentucky. Now, I believe the aluminum base they make in York, somewhere down there, they're not unionized, But the glass that covers the light bulbs are made by steelworkers up in Wellsboro, Pennsylvania, and I think it's the electrical union up in St. Mary's, Pennsylvania, that assembles all this together. This meets the government requirements for energy light bulbs. There is no mercury, unlike the CFLs, the Curlicue bulbs that contain mercury. If you break one of these bulbs that they make up there in St. Mary's, you just sweep them up. You don't have to worry about cleaning up or hazmat. I mean, every one of those CFLs are supposed to be recycled. Most people don't. They throw it in their garbage. It's going to leak in our water. And every CFL that's made in this country comes from China. These are made in America by American workers, and the vast majority of them, union workers, getting a good salary.
And what's the name of them?
They're the they're made by Sylvania. They're called halogen super savers. They know that halogen lights give off a brighter light than regular incandescent bulbs, so they could make them a little bit dimmer and use less energy. So they use about 30% less energy than a regular incandescent light bulb. So it meets the government's requirements for energy savings. And they're not the CFLs that you see. You know,
they don't look like the little curly fries.
That's right. The old pigtails and, and those light that comes out with the bluish light, it looks like you're in some kind of terrarium for a gecko or something. These give an excellent, honest light, and they're completely safe. And we're trying to get the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to look at buying that for the procurement because of the mercury. It shouldn't be in, you know, when you look at cafeterias and places like that where, you know, for the state colleges and that stuff, they should be using these bulbs instead
Absolutely.
Of CFLs.
Especially made right here in Pennsylvania.
And they're made right here in Pennsylvania. So,
you know, sometimes I just shake my head when we talk about procurement and some of the bizarre things that we do. In buying things for state government or for federal government, like the census, for instance. When the census was out, about a year and a half ago, handing out their swag, the hats made in China, the mugs made in Mexico. You go, really? Couldn't make those here.
Doesn't make sense.
Talking about creating jobs, and you've made them overseas. Mickey, I appreciate your time. Always great talking to you. Always great talking to the folks from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. AmericanManufacturing.org is the website. We've got a link at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Mickey, thanks again.
Thank you very much for having me, Rick.
We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Also, remember, check out our website at therickSmithShow.com. You can email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally, and I appreciate the contact. The Associated Press reported today that the Virginia House passed a bill to preclude efforts to make easier workplaces to unionize. The bill passed 63-32 on Friday, seeks to prevent quote-unquote card check from being put into place administratively by the National Labor Relations Board. Congress, as they're saying, failed to pass the legislation last year. House Democratic Leader Ward Armstrong called it another election year bid by legislative Republicans to appease conservative constituents by trying to preempt federal authority. Several measures defying Congress and the president have passed Virginia's GOP-run House, including one that would allow two-thirds of the states to repeal federal laws. The bill, their main sponsor, Tim Hugo, said it was proactive, not preemptive, protecting workers' rights to casting secret ballots. And if you look across the country, you've got four states who are joining together to fight back against this very issue. Now, understand, this law has been in place since 1935. This is how it's always been done. What's amazing to me is that they want to even take this small little step away. Understand, if you get you get people who sign these union cards, 30% of them sign cards, you can ask for an election under the Labor Relations Act. Now, the employer has the right at 30% to recognize the union. So you don't have to have a vote. Okay, the employer says, all right, I like the fact that the union brings me employees. I like the fact that it gives me some stability. I like the fact that it might give me some health insurance, some good things. Fine. We're gonna let all of them everybody be unionized. It's an agreement between the employer and the employee. What the Republicans want is they want to take that away from you. They want to say, no. We will not allow that to happen. We are going to defy 75 odd years of the employee, of the National Labor Relations Act. And we're going to make something new because you, the employee and the employer, you're not trustworthy. It's basically what they're saying. So they're going to go move forward on this challenge because the Labor Relations Board said, look, the states can't override federal law. The National Labor Relations Act is a federal law. Just like states cannot go and say, you know what, 13-year-old kids can work in coal mines. They can't do it. Just like they can't say, you know what, workers can work 100 hours a week and we don't have to pay them overtime. It's a federal law. There are very few federal laws. Understand, very few federal laws that protect workers. But what you've got is you've got these people who are hell-bent on being business-friendly. And if they can pass these kind of bizarre little rules that don't amount to much, look, and it's in Arizona, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Utah, not places that I would consider the height of unionism. In South Carolina, you got the governor actually saying she's going to work to usurp federal law. So that workers at Boeing, the Boeing plant that's going to be built down there can't unionize. I mean, if I'm a business owner, let me go to a place where I'm going to have the government establishment beat down the workers. Man, we are going backwards and backwards fast. You go back and read some of the history of labor, where the governors sent in the National Guard or the militia to put down strikes, where the governors sent in planes to drop bombs on people. We've done this stuff where you've had sheriff's departments shooting people in the back, like up the road here in Latimer. We're going back to this where the government is actually stepping in and being the enforcer for business, not the moderator. I mean, stop for a minute and think about this stuff. We are living in really, really bizarre times. When you've gotten to the point where we're so business conscious, so business friendly, that we're going to use our government against ourselves, what sense does that make? And is that what's in the best interest of all of us? And I say it's not. So at the end of this, it's going to be a lot of wasted money for the folks in Arizona, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Utah, and in Virginia. They're going to spend a lot of money to find out that, you know what, federal law dictates they're not going to be able to throw it out. But what it's going to give them, it's going to give them the ability to campaign, to sloganeer, because that's all this stuff is about. You know it's not going to amount to much. But you do know that it's good for campaigning. And I look at DeMint, Senator Jim DeMint from South Carolina, who I guess on Thursday reintroduced the Secret Ballot Protection Act. Him and 17 other Republicans put it forward. Again, you know, we're going to make sure that people are forced into an election. And I say, you know what? Keep the government out of it. I don't want the government in it. Personally, I'm a big fan of going back to the way it used to be. The two groups make an agreement, and the government stays out of it. Understand why the Labor Relations Act was passed, to quell those problems. We're going to take a quick break, right back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. A New York City councilman is being scrutinized by prosecutors and the public for conflicting statements regarding an allegation that sanitation workers came to him and complained that they were under orders by their union to slow down snow removal cleanup in late December to protest budget cuts. The allegation by City Councilman Dan Holleran led to a media firestorm directed at unionized city and state workers. Holleran originally told CNN that after the workers called him, he invited them into his offices to sit down and talk about the situation. However, a spokesman for Holleran told the New York Daily News on Friday that the councilman only spoke to the workers briefly before sending them to find a different attorney. Holleran invoked attorney-client privilege when meeting with prosecutors and has refused to reveal the names of the sanitation workers. Elected officials in New York City are not allowed to provide unpaid services for city-related work according to ethics rules. The New York Times wrote last week that investigators have been unable to find any other workers willing to admit knowledge of the slowdown plot. As union construction workers struggle to get back to pre-recession employment levels, they're stressing the benefits of highly skilled labor. Doug Cunningham files this report.
In construction today, everybody wants to build faster, better, safer, and cheaper. In St. Louis, Union Construction can deliver on those goals. Jim Lamantia is the director of PRIDE, Productivity and Responsibility Increased Development. Lamantia says it's because Union Construction is highly skilled and productive. He says the I-64 project in St. Louis was a prime example.
They met the schedule. In fact, they came in several months ahead of schedule, and they also came in several million dollars below budget. Once you get to the point where you are a highly trained individual, then the cost of your services can be as high as it is in St. Louis, and it still doesn't add to the cost of the project.
Lamantia says a study of highly technical medical building projects showed that union construction in St. Louis was lower than similar project costs in many places around the country.
Ford's 2010 profits exceeded the company's expectations, reporting income of $6.6 billion, nearly double the profits of 2009. The high profits will mean bonuses for workers in the shape of profit-sharing checks. 40,600 hourly workers will receive a check of nearly $5,000 in March.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by ULICO and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachman, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. If there's any part of the program you missed, everything is archived right there for your enjoyment. You can download it anytime at your convenience. Blanche Lincoln, one of our favorite Democrats, beaten in the last election. I got to tell you, I was hoping that she would have lost in the primaries. I was a Halter supporter. I was hoping that he would kick her out. That happened, so she ended up taking a whipping in the general. But you know what? Hey, you know, must be tough to be a former senator looking for a job. She's been elected to the board of directors for Entergy Corporation. According to their most recent proxy statement, Entergy pays their directors between $60,000 and $90,000 a year in cash, plus $45,000 worth of stock, and about $60,000 in retirement, plus other benefits such as life insurance, you know, personal air travel, you know, for a couple of meetings a year. That's good work if you can get it. I'll bet you she's sure glad she gave up that whole senator gig. You know, I gotta wonder, how do I get gigs like that? You know, how do working class people get gigs like this? Where we show up to two or three, maybe four meetings a year, we raise our hand a couple of times, and make $90,000 plus a bunch of stock and some retirement money. How do we get that? Truth of the matter is we don't. We're the ones who pay for that. We're the ones who pay, big money so that we can get that to them. How nice of us. How many people saw the article in the Wall Street Journal? I get the Wall Street Journal because I want to know what our investor class folks are doing. So Pat Toomey had written a piece, our junior senator here in Pennsylvania, titled, How to Freeze the Debt Ceiling Without Risking Default. Now understand, you know, there's a bunch of Republicans who are saying, oh, what we need to do is we need to stand firm. We're not going to raise the debt ceiling. We're going to have to live within our means, which means slash and burns programs for you people, for those people. Let Granny go out and get a job. So how do we do this? How do we freeze the debt ceiling, let all those people suffer without risking our wonderful bond rating, without risking our credit? Next year, he said, the government will have 10 times more income than it needs to honor its interest obligations. He says that it's completely unacceptable, under no circumstances, should the U.S. default on its debt. Because he says we're not only morally obligated to honor our debts, but we benefit greatly from the near universal conviction that those who lend us will always be repaid on time and in full. We should never undermine that conviction. So our banker senator, our Wall Street senator, has taken to the position that we all knew he was going to take, the banker's side, pay us first, and the heck with those other people. So he's making the position that the interest that we pay of our budget is about 6%, 6.5%. So they're projecting that we're going to bring in about 67% of expenditures, which means that we're going to have to borrow a third of the money that we're going to spend next year. He's saying no more borrowing. We're going to pay our 6.5% of interest as they're supposed to be paid, and we're going to slash and burn everything else. He writes, quote, to make absolutely sure, I intend to introduce legislation that would require the Treasury to make interest payments on our debt its first priority in the event that the debt ceiling is not raised. So foreign corporations, foreign governments, foreign investors, well, our investor class, of course, the people who put him into power, make sure they're protected first and foremost, and whatever may be left behind, let the rabble have. Now understand, this is Wall Street's guy. He's protecting Wall Street's interest. Why? Because this is the guy who they put into power. And I gotta be honest. Most of the things that the horrible things that have happened are because of guys like him. He goes on to say, in the event that we have to freeze spending, you know, we're going to have to furlough a bunch of workers, or we're not going to be able to pay our vendors, and, you know, we're going to some projects are going to have to be postponed. You know, it's going to be tough, but we need to keep Wall Street happy. We need to keep the bondholders happy. We need to keep foreign corporations and foreign governments happy. So he says, but it would be even worse simply to raise the debt ceiling without regaining control of federal spending. The recent surge in spending, both in absolute dollars and as a percentage of our GDP, has driven us to record deficits and an explosion of debt. Am I the only one who remembers why we had this increase in spending? Am I the only one who's getting it? Do you remember the policies that were endorsed by this guy? I.e. the Gramm-Leach-Bliley, the whole economic thing back under Clinton, or am I missing this? This whole deregulation model, this whole, oh yeah, the banks, they can take care of themselves. Oh, they won't screw us again. Am I the only one who remembers this? So now what they're saying is, look, yeah, we've screwed things up. Take care of us. Take care of the already well-to-do. Take care of the bankers. Take care of the bondholders. Take care of the risk takers. Isn't that part of being involved in Wall Street? You know, when I plunk a chip down on the roulette table, I would like to have someone making sure that my bet is insured, that I can't lose. That's what's going on here. You know, where's the risk in investing? I was always told that the reason that there was such wild reward, and the reason we can't tax the risk takers, is because there's this big risk out there, and they could lose it all. I'm not seeing that. You know, I see guys like this who are making sure that they're taken care of, before granny's taken care of, before the children are taken care of, before schools are funded. Take care of the investor class. He finishes up by saying, for too many years, Congress has ignored or exacerbated the looming financial crisis created by overspending. Last fall's elections were largely a call to finally deal with this imminent threat. The vote on the debt ceiling is Congress's opportunity to begin making real progress. First and foremost, again, I love their frame. And they're sticking, man. Their frame is pure and simple. It's the spending problem. And every Republican you hear straight down the line, they say the exact same thing. We're spending too much. We're spending too much. We're spending too much. When the reality is we've given away most of our revenue. We've here, investor class, we don't want your money anymore. And we've created a billionaire class out of people who used to pay the things that we're now borrowing for. Am I the only one who's getting this? When someone's sitting on their yacht, collecting dividend checks, paying less in income tax than I pay, busting my behind, explain to me why that's good for our economy. Explain to me why that's good for our country. But they're using that frame. And they've got most people talking about, oh, yeah, the federal government wastes too much. It's the office of waste, fraud, and abuse. But when you talk to folks over here on the Hill, people who've had their eyes open and go, holy crow, there's none of that. In fact, government actually is pretty efficient, works pretty well, surprisingly. And I'm saying not surprisingly. What we have is we have a revenue problem. And we have a governor who's against raising revenue. We have a governor who's not willing to tax the oil and the gas industry, not willing to go after the cigar tax or the smokeless tobacco. And I'm hoping, there's part of me that hopes, he's going to go after the Delaware loophole. And Jake, I got to tell you, I listened to this and I'm frustrated by it.
I don't think so, Rick. I think he's bought into the Republican hype, the conservative Republican hype. I really don't think he's going to. That's long overdue. I mean, all you got to do is look at the numbers, and that would be a simple thing to do. It's been there far, far, far too long. It's cost the Treasury of this state so much money. I agree with you. You just shake your head and wonder, wow. I mean, where are we going with this? He's basically, I mean, it's about the agenda here. He wants to sell the state stores. What is that doing? That's kicking the can down the road, and the taxpayers of Pennsylvania will pay and pay out of their pockets and pay and pay. They're talking about making Pennsylvania a right-to-work state, which in the long run, and even in the not the long run, short-term or medium-term, that's gonna make it harder for workers to make a reasonable wage. That's going to hurt the coffers of the state of Pennsylvania. I mean, the things that he wants to do and he's not willing to do, it seems instead of improving the situation, are going to exasperate the financial woes of the state.
And for pure and simple ideology. And I've been saying for years, you know, you need to have a stable tax code. And it's not something that we've been willing to talk about. There, you know, look, our budget, are there things in there that could be trimmed down a little bit? Maybe. I don't know that there's that much left. Understand that Rendell cut $3 billion from our budget. Yeah, he did increase education spending, but I'm in favor of that. I think that's smart. I think it's good policy. I don't know, to educate those kids that are going to take care of me, the next generation of heart surgeons or brain surgeons that may save my life in 20 years. I think that's a pretty good thing to do. And I would be happy to take a couple of bucks away from Warren Buffett or ExxonMobil, who saw their profits increase by 53% in the fourth quarter. And you look at today's Wall Street Journal, which, you know, again, just grabbed me by the throat. Corporate profits are up like gangbusters. And they go through talking about how much 50% of the corporations have already reported their fourth quarter earnings. And they have been exceptionally strong. This year is going to be the third best full year on record since 1998. The third quarter was the best quarter on record. The fourth quarter makes this entire year the third best year since 98. Profits are way up. CEO pay is way up. And you look at some of this other stuff. S&P now forecasts the fourth quarter earnings will rise about 22% or 32% over a year ago. 32% increase in their profits. Yet, how many people have gotten raises? How many new jobs have been created? Some, not money. These companies are sitting on boatloads of cash. And you look at the telecom sector, their profits rose by 58%. And you can go through this whole article, at the 77% jump for the S&P for Chevron, 77%. So we're talking huge, huge amounts of money, big bucks in the pockets of big corporations. That is not, it's not reaching down to you and me. There's no trickle down effect here. The only trickle I'm getting is that salty yellow stuff that ends up at the end of a long night of drinking. Again, like Bush said, they got drunk, and now we're getting it. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Dancing with the devil? Never fool yourself into thinking that you're in the lead. That would be my 50 cents worth of advice to President Obama as he rushes ahead with the remake of his presidency into a Clinton-esque corporate enterprise. Following last fall's congressional elections, he immediately began blowing kisses to CEOs and big business lobbyists, and he's now filled his White House dance card with them. First came Bill Daley, the Wall Street banker and longtime corporate lobbyist. In early January, Obama brought him to the White House ball to be his chief of staff, gatekeeper, and policy coordinator. Then, Obama tapped Jeffrey Immelt to lead his Council on Jobs, which is supposed to, quote, encourage the private sector to hire Americans and invest in American competitiveness. This is a bizarre coupling, for Immelt is CEO of General Electric and has been a leader in shipping American factories and jobs to Asia and elsewhere. Today, fewer than half of GE's workers are in our country. As an AFL-CIO official notes, highly globalized companies don't have the same interests as the United States. There is no company more emblematic of this than GE. In his recent State of the Union speech, Obama offered only cold comfort to the millions of Americans who are unemployed or barely employed, saying blandly that, quote, the rules have changed. Well, yes. And who changed them? Self-serving CEOs like Jeffrey Immelt, that's who. America's working families, who make up our endangered middle class, have a right to expect Obama to fight for rules that are fair to them and our country, not meekly accept rules that have been skewed by an elite corporate class to profit them alone. Instead, our president is waltzing with the devil. This is Jim Hightower saying, he's rebranding his presidency, all right. It's becoming Obama Incorporated.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.com.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com today in labor history. Back in 1978, after scoring successes with representation elections conducted under the protective oversight of the California Agricultural Labor Relations Board, the United Farm Workers of America officially ended its historic table grape, lettuce, and wine boycotts. That was today, back in 1978. When we were in D.C. here this past week, I met somebody who told me that there's a charter school or a school that started up in D.C. with Cesar Chavez's name on it, and that the school had fired a teacher for organizing a union. I mean, stop and think about that for a second. How bizarre that kind of a thing is. Amazing stuff. Also today, back in 2002, union and student pressure forced Harvard University to adopt new labor policies, raising wages for their lowest paid workers. I think a very good thing. And also today, back in the year 2005, 5 months after Hurricane Katrina, the New Orleans School Board fired every teacher in the district in what the United Teachers of New Orleans saw as an effort to break the union and privatize the school system. Boy, wouldn't the Republicans in this state love to have that opportunity? Like I've always said, they never miss an opportunity to exploit a good tragedy.
Absolutely. And the perfect example is New York, about a month ago, Rick.
Oh, I remember.
There were all those allegations. I heard the right wing, they were going nuts from the local talk show host.
Unions.
From the local talk show host to the to the right-wing noise machine at national level. All those unionists, see what they did? They actually cost the lives of some people because they deliberately wouldn't clean the streets.
They killed an old woman and a baby.
Yeah, they did say that. They absolutely... Well,
no, they did.
Well, you know what? Now we find out that the city councilman by the name of Dan Halloran, who created this firestorm, is not kind of backtracking. And he's saying, well, you know... these workers came into my office, and I'm not free to divulge their names. He's invoking,
client-patient privilege.
Client-patient, yeah. Client-lawyer privilege, and there's investigations going into it, and supposedly the New York News last week came out with a report that said the investigators can't find any worker who is making this charge. So the question begins... Were there any workers to begin with, or did Mr. Halloran, as to deal with these unions, have a political agenda?
Yeah, look, at the end of this, it's all politics. The reality in this whole scenario is the fact that Bloomberg laid off 600 employees in the sanitation department. If you don't have the people to do the work doesn't get done. It doesn't mean that the guys who are out there are going to go twice as fast. It means it just doesn't get done. And, of course, they also found a guy, one guy. They found one guy that was sleeping in the truck for an hour and 15 minutes, I guess it was. We find out later it was like a 16-hour day. The guy pulled over to take a nap, which, you know, I got to be honest with you, I've driven a truck for years. I used to do all the time. Because if you cannot keep your eyes open long enough to see what's coming in front of you, you shouldn't be on the road.
Listen, I can tell you, I work for a union. I'm a member of a union, and we have some union members who are in charge of cleaning huge, huge parking lots. You know what I'm talking about, the Hershey Interest Rick. And sometimes in the big snowstorms, they are out there for several days. They actually have, the company provides sleeping quarters for them. I mean, some of them put in 18, 20-hour days, and they take a couple hours snooze, and they're back at it. If you've ever cleaned snow in a situation where it's absolutely necessary, now, at Herco, it's, you know, they have events all the time in winter. And it goes right to the bottom line. If you don't have places to park these people, you know, you're going to lose money. So it's important.
Yeah, $7 a pop.
Know what I'm talking about. It's big money. So these employees are putting in large amount of hours, and you got to sleep at some point. It comes down to safety. Especially, we're not talking about a private employer here on a private lot. We're talking about people cleaning the streets in New York.
But so, if you remember listening to the end of all this, this was another one of those calls for privatization. Well, they should have had private contractors, for-profit contractors, come in and do it. And, yeah, I would say, great.
There's only one problem. What private contractor has the resources to clean a city the size of New York?
They don't.
They absolutely do not. And they don't have, and most of them don't have the experience. Look, when you do this over a period of years, I mean, you can say what you want, but you have experience. You know how to do it. You know how to do it right. And it's a tough job. It's really a tough job. And you better know what you're doing. You're going to literally bury cars that are going to be there for a long time. You're going to hurt the transportation system.
I'm in favor of that.
Well, it depends who it is. But seriously, I mean, they write these people off. They're just workers, but they provide a very important service to the citizens of that city.
And you know, it goes back to what the Republicans are pushing, this idea of core government function. And I would say cleaning the roads are, that's clearly a core government function. Making sure that our commerce moves, making sure that people get to and from work. Clearly something we should absolutely be doing. And as I said, the day it happened, this is an example of shrinking the size of government. This is an example of trying to do more with less. So when you have these big storms, this is what you get out of it. It's that simple.
Good story coming out of Ford. They announced this week that they've doubled their profits from 2009. That's great news. And here's the best. There's about 40,600 of their hourly employees that will see bonuses of $5,000 in March. That's sizable. That's great to see. And here's what's important to remember. Do you remember back at the end of the Bush administration, we had those TARP money going out and saving these corporations? Well, do you remember some of the Southern senators? I do. Specifically the Southern senator from Tennessee that said, we shouldn't be bailing them out. We shouldn't be bailing out these auto companies. It's all about saving the unions, because Obama owes the unions a lot because of their help during the election. Well, you know what? They're not only on schedule. Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler, they're not only on schedule to pay the money back. They're going to pay the money back with interest. If you remember, these Southern congressmen, especially the senators again from Tennessee, I remember his speech. Why? Because he has foreign auto companies such as Toyota, Nissan, Hyundai, Volkswagen. He expected if the American domestic auto industry went down that those companies would be more prosperous. They would be creating more jobs in the South. So he was basically looking out for himself and at the same time going after the union workers. I think it's safe to say right now that the big three automakers probably make as good a car as anybody, dollar for dollar in the world. It's a world-class product, and it's great to see. Here's an interesting note to the Super Bowl. CBS has refused to air the NFL players' ad. they have an ad. They call it Let Us Pay. It's an ad put out by the National Football League Players Association. CBS executives said they don't want to get involved. It's about the upcoming strike. They said they don't want to get involved in the labor negotiations between the players and the NFL. CBS, Fox, NBC, and ESPN, as well as DirecTV, have agreed to pay the NFL in 2011, even if its owners carry through in their threat to lock out players, disrupting or even canceling the season. Now, the NFL Players Association is saying, look, you guys are going to get paid whether we play or not. So they're basically calling this action a collusion on the part of CBS News. The players' unions will continue to run the Let Us Play on its YouTube channel and other social media applications, and it may launch an ad in response to the CBS decision. Meanwhile, CBS lets play the ad. Just some amazing developments here. And by the way, that does look ugly. The NFL players go out and strike. I mean, a lot of us, Rick, we think of NFL players as kind of the elite. Why should we worry about it? Well, you know what? Owners and management are going to exert the same forces, are going to try the same tactics that they would any other work. And you have to understand that these NFL players have short careers, and at the end, they deserve a decent contract. Pennsylvania House members returned to talk about proposals that led to the shouting match. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have seen the shouting match between the Republicans and the Democrats. And the Republican leader, Terzai, when he not only announced that he was going to take one Democrat from each committee in the House, but he was not going to allow them to, I believe, enter in any amendments to that proposal. And at the same time, he was going to impose, which I don't understand, Rick, I don't know where he got this number, he was going to impose the 6% rule, which is what he said. It said, in other words, he was going to give the Republicans who have control a 6% advantage. He was going to allow the Democrats and Republicans to have proportionate representation. In other words, the way the vote came down, the numbers of Republicans and Democrats would give the Republicans somehow magically, I guess, I don't know, maybe he got it from God, a 6% advantage.
You gotta love that.
Now, here's the thing. What he's trying to do is to take away some of the reforms that were instituted after the 2005 pay raise controversy. What is up for amendment tomorrow will deal with whistleblowers, state contracting, and nonprofits that lawmakers create or maintain. In other words, I think the Republicans are doing exactly what they said they wouldn't do. They want reform. They want an effective government. They want a government that is clear and concise in its objective and is fair to the taxpayers. And they're doing the exact opposite. I think if Mr. Terzai keeps that attitude and keeps doing what he did, I think long term, I think they're making a big mistake. I mean, what he did was unconscionable. That goes directly against everything that we're supposed to stand for as a democracy, Rick. It really did get ugly.
All righty. Let's take a quick break. We're right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK.
It is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits, BBS Benefits Solutions, can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Your working class radio experience.
Where hard work, common sense, and rational thoughts
are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich and robbery. Father, son, left to carry on. Blue dental, head is fake. Oh, 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 he's a working class man.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You know, going back to the Players Association's Super Bowl ad, you couldn't have asked, really, you couldn't ask for a better outcome if you're the players. I'm going to give CBS some money. They're going to run my ad. Nobody's going to really pay any attention. But it's going to be just another ad. It's probably not going to be as good as the Super Bowl ads that my wife sits and watches. So you're going to give a couple million bucks away, to run an ad once or twice. People are going to look at it. Okay, whatever. This, by denying them, the right to put it on, by denying putting it on, you have given them, I'm thinking of, throw me in the briar patch, please. Oh man, you couldn't ask for a better outcome. You remember the Swift Boat veteran people? They had that one ad that I think maybe they ran once and somebody refused and boom, it exploded. It became the news story. They got hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars of free airtime because people picked it up. It was the story. And that's what's going to happen here. So we're going to take a listen to the NFL Players Association ad, the one that the CBS is saying, nope, we're not going to let you play, but we're going to play it right here. This is the ad. A picture of a locked goalpost, empty seats, the wind blowing, empty seats, empty turnstiles, empty stairs, big lock, empty chairs, empty weight room, no shower.
Let us play.
Let them play.
Somebody's mom.
Let them play. We want to play. Let them play.
Let them play.
Let us play.
Let them play.
Let them play.
We want to play.
Let them play.
Let us play.
Let them play.
Let them play.
We want to play.
Let them play.
Let them play!
Yeah. Well, I got to be honest. I'm looking at the ad. Probably the best outcome. The absolute best outcome. CBS turned it down because it's a pretty crummy ad.
It might be a crummy ad, but what the Players Association is saying, look, CBS and these other channels are basically helping the NFL finance the lockout. That's what they're doing. They have this nice little agreement in the NFL. We're going to pay you whether we have any games or not. Nice deal if you can get it.
Again, it comes back down to this question, do we honor contracts? The networks have to honor their contracts. whether the NFL puts a product on the field or not, they have signed a contract that they're going to pay it. That's their contract. They have to pay no matter what. And the owners know that. The league knows that. Now, the league doesn't want to honor the contract that they have with their players, which is kind of weird to me. But again, when you look at this, it's really just another labor story. Take the big numbers out of it. This is an employer imposing its will on its employees. And this is employees saying, you know what? We're gonna come together collectively and fight back. Now, the spin on this is not that the players are doing the only thing they can do, which is not to play. They're saying, ha, 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 we're going to beat you to that one. We're not going to let you play, and we're going to lock you out. Hoping that we're going to side with the owners. And I got to be honest, there's part of me that thinks, and part of me that hopes, that this is one of those issues that wakes working people up, and they go, hey, wait a minute. I identify with the players more than I do with the owners. And so as this all goes, and we're going to work on getting some people here after the Super Bowl to come on the program and talk about this. Because as I understand it, March the time they're talking about locking people out? I think it's March.
Yes.
So if that happens, you're going to have several months to really get some good issue-oriented interviews on this. I'm interested to see how this plays out. Because at the end, it's all about dividing the pie. How much the owners want, and if I remember right, when we sat in on the One Players Association press conference, the owners get the first $1 billion of the pie. So that goes right to the owners right from the beginning, that first billion of the nine. And then that $8 billion is split 51% to the players, 49% to the owners. And, of course, owners keep all the concessions and the parking and all the other stuff that's generated. And the other part of this that caught me during that press conference was their workman's comp. They actually file state workers' comp like any injured worker. So depending on what state you're injured in, that could be disastrous. Because the teams have no obligation to keep you healthy.
You know, and if you know anything about football, I mean, any play, you can just have your knee just destroyed.
So Jay Cutler, was he faking or not?
No, absolutely not. I mean, his own players back him up. I mean, if you played football, you know how tough it can be.
What's amazing to me is you got a bunch of these arm, which is why I don't spend all that much time. You know, he got hurt. I don't spend all that much time fighting and arguing about it, but you got these people who, I saw him. He was walking up and down the steps.
Listen, when you make it at that level, Rick, you gotta have heart. I mean, you gotta have a drive. It's hard for me to believe that this man, as hard as he knows it is to get to the Super Bowl, when you're what, one step away, you're away. That was the NFC Championship game. He was one victory away from going to the Super Bowl, which is the ultimate for a pro athlete. It's very, very difficult for me to believe that that man would do everything in his power to be out there. Now, here's the thing. His backup didn't do bad. Now, did the coach make the right decision? He knows what the backup can do, and if Cutler can only go out there and play at 50%, what good is he? I think you have to give credit here to the coaches. I mean, the coaches knew what was up. They know their players. They're paid to know their players. And the Chicago Bear own players said, no, we back him. He wasn't faking. I mean, it's easy to say that. And I know he played for your team out there in Denver. You liked it.
The team in Denver.
You liked Denver.
Owned by a guy named Pat Bowlens.
If you have a favorite team, it's Denver, and I know he had a reputation of not getting along with the coaches. So, you know, maybe his reputation preceded him, but give the man credit here.
I don't care one way or another. But so who's going to win? Who's going to win Sunday?
I got to go. Do I think the Steelers are going to win? I think at the end they are. They are still the best defensive team in football.
Well, we shall see. I'm not.
I mean, part of me would say, hey, you know, Green Bay hasn't been there for a while. I mean, I think it'll be a good game, actually.
I want Green Bay to win because, you know, it's one of those the teams owned by the city. It's their team.
I think the irony is you probably have the two two best franchises in football playing each other right now. I mean, put obviously Pittsburgh's a great franchise with a great owner. I mean, Mr. Rooney is a great owner. I mean, he's really takes care of his players. But it's not as it should be. The two best teams in football with the two best franchises, in my opinion, playing in the Super Bowl. That's great for football.
What's the spread?
It's pretty close. This is off the top of my head. I don't know, but I would guess Pittsburgh maybe by three.
So you're going to say Pittsburgh by three. All right. Well, we'll see. I'll stick with the – I don't care.
Well, if Green Bay wins, I'll watch it. I think it'll be a very interesting game. Could go either way.
All right. We're going to take a quick break right back after this to wrap things up.
I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Amy Morton, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well?
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come all ya good workers, good news to you out there. Prove how the good old union has come in here to fill. Which smile are you
on? And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You can download our podcast, and for all of our podcast listeners, thank you. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your opinions. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. We're this month trying to cater to our podcast friends. We'd like to have that conversation. What is it you'd like to hear? What is it that you find interesting? Today in history here in the country, 1940 was the year Ida M. Fuller became the first retiree to receive an old age monthly benefit check under the new Social Security law. She paid in $24.75 between 1937 and 1939 on an income of $2,484. Her first check on this day in 1940, $22.54. I think about that, and I can hear my Social Security hating friends saying, "Well, what? She paid in $24 and got $22 back? How dare they do that?" Understand, this was set up so that people working cover the people who are retired. And while, you know, the folks of that generation may not have paid in, we needed to help them. It was the right thing to do. And I love this ideology, it's not even ideology. It's frameology. It's they pitch it. Oh, Social Security is going to go bankrupt. Oh, the trust fund will go bankrupt. And yes, eventually it will, as it should. The box that they were talking about to get the pig through the python, eventually will go away, and we will return to a pay-as-you-go system. The way it was set up, you would pay in, that money was then taken, and it was divvied out. The idea of having this big, giant pot of money laying around was not a good idea because we spent it on a lot of things, and now we don't want to pay it back, which is why people like Alan Simpson are talking about, oh, we need to privatize. We need to raise the retirement age. We need to cut the benefits. So that's why today I thought it was really interesting that Harry Reid came out and said he was going to do everything in his power to prevent the privatization or eliminating Social Security. He said, quote, as long as I'm majority leader, I'm going to do everything within my legislative powers to prevent privatizing or eliminating Social Security. Simply say it's off the table. We're not going to balance the budget on the backs of senior citizens. He went on to say the most successful social program in history and the history of this world is Social Security. And I agree. The reality is that's where the money's at. So you got the Cantors of the world and the Boners of the world saying, oh, boy, if we can only get Wall Street's hands on that, oh, the damage we could do.
Since this subject has intensified the last 6 months, that the talking heads are now stretching it. Instead of saying, well, in the year 2037, we can't meet our demands at 100%, they're saying it's going to go bankrupt. And they just pass that along as, you know, that as if, and again, they're very good at structuring, they're very good at mind pictures. It's going to go broke in 2037. Well, no, it's not. It's not going to go broke. At that point, it can't meet its fiduciary responsibility is at 100%, but that can easily be fixed by then, easily.
And, you know, what you've got is you've got people who are so-called Democrats who are out there pushing that theme. I think of Erskine Bowles. I think of that Alice Rivkin out there pushing that theme. And Reid went on to say, unfortunately, it appears that it's become the official position of the Republican Party to privatize and dismantle Social Security, saying that they're using scare tactics, saying the program's in crisis and on the verge of bankruptcy. He says this is a myth and it's not true. Just reiterating what you said, Jake. Last month, the Social Security Trust Fund had a surplus in its coffers of $2.6 trillion, according to the 2010 trustee report. That, again, is going to remain solvent at 100% till 2037. Now, are there some smart things we can do? Absolutely. I could fix things one stroke of the pen. Make me king for a day. I could fix all our problems. Would not be at all troublesome. And it would be a major stimulus for the working people of this country. Now, the David Teppers of the world, not going to be happy. Because, oh, I don't know, they're going to have to pay their fair share. I say you drop the rate down, and we've been through this, drop the rate down in half and eliminate the cap. And say absolutely every penny of income, and we're going to call income everything that comes into your wallet. That's income. So if you made all your money sitting on a yacht sipping margaritas in the French Riviera while your stock portfolio is growing, congratulations, that's income. And we tax that at about, yeah, I'd say 6%. 6% seems reasonable. This way you and I get a nice shot in the wallet. We can go put that back into the economy and boost the economy. Seems reasonable to me.
Or, if you can't get that through Congress, how about this? How about raising it considerably? Let's triple it and index it. You don't have to worry about it, but put it on automatic. Index it. Cost of living. There's ways it can easily be done. I wouldn't have any problem with your proposal, Rick. And reducing the tax rate is you know, it's a win-win because it's a short term, it's a small economic stimulus. And all that, every dollar is going to go back for most people is going to be spent, plowed right back into the economy.
Absolutely. And what you're going to get is you're going to get a handful of people going, but mine, me.
Well, of course they are. Nothing's going to be
and
easy.
You go, here's the thing, reality, folks. Wow, this country's been very good to you. Very good. It's time you pay a little bit back. And are you going to get your money back? No. But what you're going to have is you're going to have a stable society. You're going to have a society where senior citizens are not going to have to choose between cat food and medicine. They're not going to have to choose between living in the streets or having a place to stay. Not going to happen anymore. If we're this grand Christian nation that we keep telling ourselves that we are, at some point we have to take care of others. And, you know, that's really the amazing part of the whole Republican ploy. It's all about me and, you know, screw everybody else.
Well, thank God there are a few. There are a few rich, two of the richest men in America both said, you know, we need to invest back in America. But this concept of giving back just seems to be foreign to some of these people. You know, is there end in life to have 10 yachts instead of 2 or 3?
I mean, during the 80s?
Wow.
You remember during the 80s, the one with the most toys win? You know, that whole greed is good. These people believe that stuff. And look, I'm not against it. I understand greed. At some point, though, don't you have to restrain that a little bit and say, you know what, as a society, you know, again, and not just a group of individuals, but as a society, are there not things that are beneficial to our society and rich people as well? I mean, I don't want to do away with rich people. I'm not one of those who think everything should be distributed equally like I get blamed for all the time. No, I don't believe that at all. But I do believe that for those who have very little, there should be a helping hand upward.
Absolutely. And, I mean, the robber barons and those very, very wealthy Americans in the last 100 years, I mean, there was a time when, you know, because of the tax structure, they funneled a lot of that money, and it did an awful lot of good in the United States. And you know what? Those people lived awfully, awfully good. It's not like, boy, if you ask them to pay more taxes, it somehow, you know, they're going to live like you and I. It ain't going to happen. The rich will always find ways to protect their money. They always have and they always will. It doesn't matter if the top tax rate is 35% or if it's 75%. They will find ways to protect the maximum amount of dollars that they can. That's why they hire people. It's that simple. The difference is that money that we used to plow back into America, it's going into their pockets.
Yeah, so we hear all this talk about, oh, we need to tighten our belts. We need to, some tight budgeting. We need to, you know, start thinking about cutting back. And I say this simply, I'll tighten my belt, I'll cut back when the pain is felt across the spectrum. I don't want to see my grandmother have her Social Security cost of living frozen again. I don't, and then not being able to come up with a couple of bucks to help them out. I don't want to see pre-K programs cut. I don't want to see Head Start programs cut. I don't want to see education cut. I don't want to see programs for autism and programs for the disabled cut. Don't want to see that. Before we go down that path, doesn't it make a little bit of sense to go, hey, call it what you want, like Corb said, ask for a contribution instead of a tax. Hey, give us contribute a little bit more. That's what I'm saying. It's pretty simple stuff.
Well, you know, if we close these corporate loopholes and if we stop giving tax breaks to corporations to take their jobs overseas, maybe there'd be a little more enlightened self-interest, because then they'd have to worry about the people here to be successful in their businesses, instead of, well, you know, we'll take our money and we'll go overseas, we'll go to China and we'll make our money. I don't know when this country's going to turn around. I heard a gentleman today, I'm not going to tell you which talk show, she's a nationally renowned talk show host on the right, and the gentleman that she was interviewing started suggesting that maybe we need to go after the Chinese a little bit, and maybe we need to do something about these outrageous infractions of international law. And right away the accusation was, well, you know, then you're being protectionist. Well, yeah. And I asked her or any other right-wing talk show host, what's wrong with being protectionist to a certain degree, what's wrong with that, protecting jobs and keeping jobs here? Every other industrialized country in the world does it.
Well, let me ask her where she lives and if she leaves her front door open. If she does, well, then we'll give out her address. And,
I'm sure she doesn't.
Can go freely take from her. she's being protectionist if she locks her front door. How dare she? And the reality is, yeah, I'm a protectionist. Every day I leave my house, I lock the door.
And
I'm not an isolationist, though. I didn't dig a big moat. There's no moat around my house.
I was very surprised. This, you know what this guy said? He said, when you talk to the Chinese, he said, they can't believe that the leaders of this government allowed to happen. They said they actually laugh at us.
Of course they do. I would laugh at us.
I mean, think about what we're doing. If I were the Chinese, oh my, I'd be laughing all the way to the bank.
And they are.
And they are.
Anyway, thanks for being here tonight. I want to thank all of our guests. John Hanger, former Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection. Mickey Bolts from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. And Jeanette Smith from the South Florida Interfaith Worker Justice. Thanks for your calls. If there's any part of the program you missed, make sure you go to thericksmithshow.com and download our podcast. You can also watch the video, see our ugly mugs right there on the screen. Until tomorrow, have a great night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like a tidal flood beneath the bitter sway. Imperial, mysterious, in amorous array. Democracy is coming.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Well, they're stealing down on Wall Street and in Washington.